go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each day by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Apologize if I might sound a little bit strange from time to time. I mean, apart from the usual strangeness that I sound like. I'm trying to get used to some kind of monitoring off of the mixer here in the absence of the stuff that got stolen from that little bastard in Belgium. That little Belgian bastard. I can't seem to find anything that quite works. So at some point in time, I guess I'm going to have to get on the horse and drive about 90 miles from here to the shop of a very dear friend of mine and get him to pour that booky stuff in my ear again to make the molds for my monitors so that I can hear what I'm saying as I had gotten used to hearing it. Just sounds like I'm in a tin cup. It's all an after effect of the great Belgian backpack heist. Those in-ear monitors are rather pricey. But things become necessary. I do want to thank you for your continued support of the program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. The Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. We call what we do here conversation radio, and we rather pride ourselves on it. It's available to you via the interweb tubes. You know, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. It's available to you via the interweb tubes on a number of different formats, starting out with headonradionetwork.com and whiterosesociety.org themselves. The former for the live stream and the 24/7 stream, and the latter for the live stream as well as the home of All Horn Podcasting. You can, of course, also get the podcasts at iTunes Radio and other platforms carrying the programming. Also include our friends at Stitcher Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, and a wide variety of other platforms that I really need to research. Or if you're listening on some other platform, do by all means let me know how you're listening so that we can share that with others who might find it equally good and convenient. Okie dokie? Yeah. No, this is... these things arrived today and they're just... Yeah. I may go back to the cans. The cans get to... It gets to where it feels like a little vice on your head after a while. We'll find something some way. But, no, I wanted to thank you all for your support of the program. It has been wonderful. And we have, you know, we basically caught up with May and were able to pay bills that kept things actually running that one needs to have, like a toll-free number, in order to have a radio show. And we are still paying bills like crazy. And we, simply put, need to continue that level of level of contributory funding, so that we can get everything taken care of that has to be taken care of. You know, this is we don't ask for $20,000 a month. We don't ask for $50,000 a month. We seek 250 people to kick in $10 apiece, of which many of you have done so far. And thank you for those of you who have. We still need a lot more to get well seated into where we need to be for June, because basically we just finished the first week of June taking care of the last couple of weeks of May, and now we need to get on the stick for June. So any help you can give is much, much appreciated. And I mentioned all that simply because this is Friday, and I won't be saying anything for a couple more days. It is Friday on the front. And you know what that means, just a matter of kicking back and walking up and knocking the dirt and dust off your boots and putting them up on the porch rail and sitting back and talking about whatever grabs your fancy. Grab a swig out of the old earthenware jug over there, the hundred proof stuff, or just a little glass of sweet tea or maybe some lemonade. Enjoy yourself on what is an absolutely lovely Appalachian spring evening. High, puffy clouds floating through a blue, blue sky. It'll be daylight till well after the program ends this evening. This is one of my favorite times of year when the days get longer and longer and longer. We'll have daylight till probably 9:30 tonight. So, yeah, clean the garden mud off the loafers. That's right, Sparky. You're in the spirit of it. You get it. You understand. And just kick back and relax. Truth Seeker, we are sending here. I don't know. Is everybody else hearing? Truth Seeker says he's having a hard time hearing the program. Oh, okay, Marty. Will you please get off poor Hercule Poirot's back? Irony. Yeah, I guess Hercule Poirot was Belgian, wasn't he? And the shame of it all is there's so much good beer there and good food. And pity. Just a pity. But no, there's the great Belgian boycott is on here at the Kincaid Mansion. No Belgian chocolate, no Belgian beer. Okay, thanks, Dr. John, loud and clear. Oh, absolutely, Jim. What, no Campari? I'd like a Negroni. Well, we'll get one ordered up for you, Jim. It's Friday. That would be lovely. Got a nice Sam Adams in that tub with ice and long necks? Absolutely, and we salt the ice to make it extra cold, Marty. It is, after all, Friday on the front porch. And being Friday on the front porch, we can talk about some fears are beginning to be manifested over the Euro Cup 2012 being played in a combination of Poland and Ukraine. A big oopsie coming in Poland this week. You know, footage was released a month or so ago in a televised video report about the rise of the right wing and right wing hate and right wing racism in places like Poland and Ukraine. And there has been early mention of it. The UEFA, the governing body, has confirmed there was racist chanting at the public training session for Team Netherlands this week in Krakow, Poland. No formal investigation has been launched because the Dutch Football Federation, the KNVB, has not filed a formal complaint. Team captain Mark Van Bommel told the Dutch newspaper De Telegraaf that during practice they heard monkey chanting. It is more than a little bit disturbing to witness the rise, the return, the resurrection of the right wing in Europe, because those bastards never do anything but make trouble. And here they are again in Poland and Ukraine. Team Captain Mark Van Bommel had led the Orange to tour the death camp at Auschwitz near their base in Krakow earlier this week. Something that the events there at either are praised by these sick, fascistic right-wingers, or simply denied as never having happened. I don't know how you deny something when the place is right there. Arbeit macht frei and all of that. We all heard the monkey chants. We can't accept that, said Captain Van Bommel. He said, we reacted well. Their coach, Bert Van Marwijk, took the team to the other side of the pitch, and the situation got sorted out. You see, this has to do with skin color. It's just like that one right-wing poster that I had. I forget, somebody sent it to me during the chat a couple of nights ago, I think it was, that showed Ronald Reagan with Bonzo. You remember the Bonzo movies? No, neither do I. I was too little. I was unborn, mercifully. But it showed Reagan with Bonzo, and it said the caption said, a cherished photo of Ronald Reagan feeding the infant Barack Obama. It's a picture of Reagan giving a bottle to Bonzo from Bedtime for Bonzo. Monkey chants. Because, you see, right-wing fascism has to have an other to hate. Right-wing fascism has to have someone at whom to direct their misanthropic, sick energies. Mark Van Bommel said, if any of us is targeted by monkey chants during our matches, we won't accept it. If we hear anything like that during a game, I'll immediately go to the referee to ask him to intervene. He said, you need to open your ears if you hear them but don't want to hear them. That's worse. Because there are a lot of people, I suppose, who don't want to hear them. In the lead of that are the Ukrainian and Polish governments. Travel warnings have been issued to fans who might be going to Poland and Ukraine over the danger posed by right-wing fascist thugs. The president of UEFA in Poland and Ukraine is Michael Platini. Well, Michael Platini is the president of UEFA. Polish and Ukrainian officials have all said that, you know, right-wing thug racism isn't just a problem in Ukraine and Poland. It's all over Europe. As if that somehow excuses the conduct, which it doesn't. But it has also been claimed that there are measures in place, whatever those are, to ensure that racist incidents are kept to a minimum. How about throwing out anybody caught doing it? Kept to a minimum. However, it is good to know that the referees in the game, if it does become a problem, have the power to take players off the field and hopefully then begin to deal with the problem. Thank you, Randy. The horn's coming through okay on iTunes, but the tone is slightly off. See, I can't tell what's off and what's right and what's not, just because, well, you get used to monitoring things. Nope, stream's not broken, and everything's coming through loud and clear. About 15 minutes past the hour, and like I said, it is Friday on the front porch, so that means limited filibobstering and wide-open phone lines. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. I mean, we're awfully proud to announce that number insofar as we still have it. And you helped to make sure that the bill got paid, so by all means, let's use an 877, the numeral 4, head-on. If you do prefer to dial directly, it is 304-658-3333. And email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. Let's do go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mr. Bob Kincaid.
Well, good evening, Mr. David from Maine.
Well, yes. There is something that I think you should mention, though.
Yes?
I think it's called the AIC Act.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Please tell me more about the AIC Act.
Thank you, David. I'll be happy to. You know, we are trying to get people, and I've received several emails today. I've received several emails over the last several days since announcing it. People are contacting their members of Congress. We need more to do so. And by all means, shoot me an email when you have so that we can coordinate with the AIC team on the ground in Washington, D.C., which right now primarily consists of my dear friend and colleague, Bo Webb. We will coordinate the effort there so that we can make sure to knock on the right doors and say, you know, we know that you've got, we know that you have constituents calling. The AIC Act is a historical piece of legislation. It is truly groundbreaking insofar as it is the first piece of legislation ever to provide for a moratorium on mountaintop removal coal mining in order to fully fund a federal study that will determine actual causation for why it is that people who live near mountaintop removal communities seem to get sicker sooner and worse and more virulently than people who don't live near mountaintop removal operations. It is the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. It has not been introduced in the House of Representatives yet. We expect it will be introduced in the House of Representatives during the week of the 18th of June. And if that is in fact the case, then we expect it. We would love to have it be introduced with a dozen or two dozen co-sponsors on it, which would also be history-making as well. And that's where calling your member of Congress comes in.
What is the best form of communication? Calling, letter, or an email?
Never send a written letter. And I say that because in the wake of the anthrax attacks of 2001, procedures were put in place that keep actual snail mail from getting to Washington, D.C. in anything under 6 weeks or so. I'm not kidding. So that means that it takes extra long. I personally believe that telephone calls are the best. Although email works as well, but you never know. The thing is, you never know if anybody's received it if you're sending email. I think telephone calls work the best, and next week the members of Congress will all be in their home districts. So if you call the home district office as well as the D.C. office, you've really got a good likelihood of actually being heard and actually having your message conveyed to the individual member.
What about actually visiting the offices?
Oh gosh, if you could do that, it would be wonderful, wonderful.
And what do you think would be the best time for somebody to, if they could only, you know, they can only fit in their schedule, say, visiting the offices? I don't know, let's say four times a year or two times a year or however many they could. When is the best time you would suggest?
Well, like I said, we want this thing to drop with lots of co-sponsors on it. So next week is the very, very best time to be doing any of this, David. And I would suggest maybe about 10 o'clock in the morning.
Is there a hashtag for it?
No, there is not yet. But you know what? We need to have that conversation because I am not the Twitter expert that others are, and we need to get that thing going. We need to get a real push around around this whole effort And we need to talk about what that would be. What would a good hashtag be, do you think?
I'm thinking just off the top of my head, this is the God striking me with inspiration. ACAC.
You know what? That may very well be the thing. What is it? Brevity is the soul of wit, saith the bard.
I'm guessing that the word hashtag ache has probably been used by a few people if they're at the dentist office or...
Yeah.
Or in pain or
Well, do you think you might research a little bit of that? I mean, you're pretty.
I will. I'll research a little bit of that.
You're pretty Twitter-it. Hey, there's a word.
I will research a little bit of that, and I think also I'll do a little research on how we can get this moving in the direction so all of the internet knows about this as well.
Absolutely.
And now here's the other question. People in the international, overseas, they want to help out. What do you think is the best way for them to help out?
Well, you know, if you're overseas and you're not an expat American who might still have a member of Congress somewhere, quite frankly, the easiest way to help out is to support the work. Mm-hmm. And if you go to stoptheache.org, you will find there is a PayPal button there. And we had an email from Mike last night, who talked about the fact that he has contributed to helping the ACE team go forward, and that's an excellent way to help out. Of course, spreading the word and just generally helping to create a media buzz about this is huge.
Right.
And so if you tweet, if you Facebook, you can make the ACE Act a part of what you're doing there.
If someone's good on the artistic and design and graphics site, who should they contact for promoting this?
Probably me.
Okay. You should contact Bob Kincaid.
@gmail.com.
@gmail.com, right. I think we covered it on that one.
I think we did. You know what? We did, and you did a masterful job of leading me through that process. Thank you for reminding me.
That's not a problem. I think it's important, and I think once we get into the swing of things, if there ever is a time where I call up and I don't think you'd mention it, I will be sure to casually
do please because we're going to put the
references.
Yeah, we are really going to be putting the press on hard, especially for next week. You know, they will come back into session on Monday evening, the 18th, at I believe 6:30 p.m. So the bill could be introduced any time thereafter. What we need is massive pressure between now and a week from Monday. That's when we want to get all of these co-sponsors lined up. Because there's no excuse for a member not to sign on unless they are, of course, a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry, as is, for instance, my member of the House of Representatives, Nick Joe Rahal.
Right.
Or perhaps Shelley Moore, Arch Moore in a bad wig, Capito, or perhaps David McKinley in West Virginia's first congressional district. Now those people, or Hal Rogers, one of the single most corrupt members of the House of Representatives out of Kentucky's 5th district, you just wouldn't expect them to sign on to something that will actually save Appalachian lives. But apart from that, you know, if you've got any kind of a conscience, if you've got any kind of morality, then, yeah, there's no reason not to sign on either as an original co-sponsor or as a co-sponsor after the bill has launched. But original co-sponsors and having a whole bunch of them is a big, big deal.
So if you can do all three, you can email, you can call Congress, and do you think tweeting is effective if they have a Twitter account to reach out in that way?
Hey, if they've got a Twitter account, yeah, absolutely. Inform them. Make it impossible to turn away from this. Make them have to see it all the time.
Maybe what I'll do is I'll send you a list of all the people on Twitter of the Congress representatives.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And hopefully that a lot of people can just get that list from you, and you can distribute it that way so a lot of people will know exactly who to reach out to, because some of these names are not typical names for congressmen. There's abbreviations and stuff, so... It can be a little bit tricky. You can't just type in Congressman so-and-so. I suppose maybe that's a Twitter name. I don't know. Maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe that's your congressman's name.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, it sounds...
Now, we've got to build a big media storm around all of this, because this has the potential to really, really make history, David.
Are you hoping for are there any bloggers in the works, anyone at Crooks and Liars and stuff like that, who, just in case they may be listening to?
I've got program? Some. Well, you know, I would love to see people that I'm a real fan of. I'd love to see somebody like Susie Madrack,
right,
write about this. Because she is an amazing presence over at Crooks and Liars. I'm sure that our dear friend Jeff Biggers will be writing about it. To have the entire progressive radio universe talk about this some would be huge. I plan, of course, on contacting our dear friend Mike Malloy. I'll be talking to Rick Smith about it. I wish Hartman would cover it. Maybe somebody. Maybe
reach out to Cliff Schechter.
That would be beautiful.
I think we just thought of another.
I'll tell you somebody else, David. I think it would be awesome if I could have a conversation on air with Sam Cedar.
Oh, that would be great. As well.
And have this covered on, because he works with Ring of Fire, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, and that's why I was thinking we could reach out to Cliff Schechter, and then in turn Cliff Schechter would talk about that on the Sam Cedar program and so forth. If he's on the Ed Show, he would talk about it on the Ed Show as well. I think this would be an issue that would be up his alley, and considerable discussions regarding this. And I think we just thought of something else, Bob, to add to the list, which is, reach out to people on Twitter who are bloggers and writers to talk about this as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have anyone in mind?
Well, you know, I do read quite a bit of a few blogs. I'm thinking, obviously, of the Crooks and Liars.
Yeah.
How about Balloon Juice?
Yeah.
the ABL at Raw Story, all of Raw Stories.
Yeah.
Writers.
Absolutely.
I think there's so many different places. There's the Tree Hugger. I think the best thing to do is, if anyone else is listening, if you want to help me assemble a media list that we could send to Bob, and information, contacts, and all of that, and we'll just cover the web from place to place, and we can get this going so many people don't have to scatter and search for all these contacts.
Absolutely. Let's make this easy. And you know, you're really approaching this like a media pro, David.
Well, I think you know, part of the problem with a lot of the things, we have these stories. For example, we have people like Brad. We have Brad Blog.
Oh,
Brad,
gosh, I'm glad you mentioned Brad. We got to get Brad and Desi in on this.
Right, and you know, there's obviously Mike Malloy's in the picture. Hopefully, you know, somebody like Randy Rhodes. And I guess that takes us to go into people's forums. And maybe reaching out to Current TV as well, Link TV. I'm sure Link TV would want to be on it.
Absolutely. Maybe RTV, and reach out perhaps. It almost went without saying that we need to put information up over at Democratic Underground.
Yeah, there's a lot of places to add. So, I mean, this is a very consuming project, and I'm sure we can get a fairly decent media list by the end of this weekend, and hopefully that would help a lot of people. So, I mean, if anyone wants to help, you can reach out to me through Bob, and
remember the Dear Colleague letter, which is how one circulates new legislation. The
right.
Dear Colleague letter is already in the possession of every single member of the House, as well as specifically in the hands of the House Progressive Caucus. If you have a member, if you have a representative who's a member of that, it's gone to a couple of different lists, but everybody has it in their office. And see, just to let you know the way this thing will progress, David and everybody else, once we get this thing introduced in the House and get some momentum behind it there, then we're going to go across the hill and start working on the Senate. And I've got a couple of people right in mind right off the bat that I think would be appropriate people to start talking about this, and I'll bet you can name at least one of them right off the bat.
In your area?
No, not in my area.
But a
progressive hero.
Bernie Sanders?
Bernie!
Yes! and that brings us to Tom Hartman. I mean, there's so many people now to reach out to that there weren't 10 or 12 years ago, and that's great.
Yeah, it does show that we're making a difference and that we're making progress. And the fact that I wish I could have talked about this sooner, but everything had to be in place before we could really get out and get rolling with it. This is so important. To have a fully funded federal study to find out exactly what the disease transmission courses are, why it is that babies are poisoned in the womb by mountaintop removal. I mean, it's one thing to say that. It is another thing to know exactly from point A to point B to point C to point D why it's happening.
It almost seems like with all this stuff that you're listing, that the next thing is that comes to mind, it just pops in my head, you need to have kind of like an AIC wiki project site where you have all of this listed. So if anyone's listening who's good at the has some experience with wiki pages and putting together any of those types of information sites, there's a project for you. And here's the other thing, Bob, which is it doesn't hurt to try. Film students out there interested in filming that type of documentarian look into the mountaintop removal. That seems to be like the next step that you're going to need as well. You're going to need video as well.
I absolutely think so. And we've had a lot of brilliant filmmaking take place down in the Coal River Valley, for instance, mm-hmm. The Last Mountain, on Coal River, Adams Wood's magnificent documentary effort, Burning the Future, comes to mind. A number of films, Black Diamonds. But we've got to constantly be documenting all of this. I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Well, it seems like a lot to do in a short amount of time, but it seems to be very very doable in all aspects with this many people out there.
And some of this, like for instance, a media push probably would best coincide with the actual launch of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
But stuff like like telling your representative to sign on as an original co-sponsor, that's stuff that we can do on Twitter and with phone calls and emails. And make this a really huge press in the coming week. Jim just noted by email, contact the CDC in Atlanta. We've already, Jim, actually, we've already had conversations with the CDC. We've had conversations with that's part of what I was doing while I was gone so much in March and April. We were having conversations with the CDC. We were having conversations with the DHHS. All manner of offices. We've really tried to transform this effort away from some of the usual foci of effort and reach out into broader ripples in the pond that is the federal government.
Well, I think the trick is to have that. When we learned this from time and time again in progressive and liberal causes, is to have that constant pressure on everything, on all of these organizations, the CDC, the EPA, your congressman, and it just seems that the next step is just to have that internet presence that nobody can escape. Once you see it, you type in AIC and it's going to come up to be number one. That's what you want at the Google search, that type of thing.
Absolutely. And I don't even know where we are right now.
Well, there's always a starting place. I'm sure if we typed in AIC Project, it would be up there on the first page.
I would. Well, that's the goal, isn't it?
Well, I'm thinking with more and more people that we reach out to, and we continue to build on this. So the other thing is that, how people have like meetings and conferences. So then that takes place with the technology that we have for these days, which is Skype. So is there any talk about coordination via Skype and anything like that where people could have, like, daily assignments so they would know what to shoot for every day for goals. And
well, I guess we can use this program itself as sort of a clearinghouse along those lines. I'm not much for being a gatekeeper or anything.
Right.
And of course the you know the Horn and Malloy folks have this wonderful little Skype chat that they run almost every night, where you know perhaps they might want to discuss some of this, and if they need questions answered, I'll be happy to do that as well.
And is there a okay? This is important. Is there if someone is on a master of the YouTubes? It's not a big truck in there, and it is digital tubes though. Someone on YouTube starting a channel for the Egg Project. Is that needed? I guess what I'm talking.
I don't know that we're necessarily doing. You know, it would not hurt. It certainly would not hurt to have some sort of a video up talking about what the AIC Act is and what the AIC Act does. Maybe we need to look towards shooting that.
Well, see, the reason why I ask this is because it's a common practice now. Even if you don't have video, you have audio. You just have any place you can blanket the internet, basically.
Yeah.
So doing it respectfully, of course, is a good place to start, in my book.
Yeah.
Whether it's YouTube, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Twitter, if you have that constant presence, you know, you're building this wave and this momentum that just continues until you get to, like, a crescendo. And that's important, I think, because so many people don't see it in terms of increments, whether it's on the Internet or whether it's on print. If you don't consider all these increments, it really does matter in that sense. If you reach it to this blogger and that blogger reaches to that blogger.
Oh yeah, it's a real challenge to get the kind of saturation you really want, and it's got to happen in a million different places, just as we've discussed in these last few minutes.
Just to get that little ripple, so you can, you know, maybe get one of the hosts on MSNBC to mention it, whether it's Rachel Maddow. Dylan Radigan, Melissa H. Perry, any of those, just to get that moment where they actually
have Chris Hayes mention it on his program would be magnificent.
There you go. There's an example of somebody that we could probably reach out to. If I'll intend to reach out to a few people on Twitter after I get off the phone on this one. And yeah, Chris Hayes is a perfect example. I think if he sees that a few times, he's going to get the message, and he's going to have someone on from the AIC Act.
What's his Twitter handle, Up With Chris?
I think it's Chris L. Hayes, C-H-R-I-S L. Hayes.
Okay, H-A-Y-E-S?
Yeah, H-A-Y-E-S, yeah.
Okay.
So just Chris L. Hayes.
I guess I'd seen Up With Chris hashtagged a few times.
That's another one. I think that's for his show producer.
Oh, okay.
So the Up With Chris is, but the Chris L. Hayes, I think, is the one where you can get through directly through him. And, you know, I'm guessing Joshua Holland at Alternet.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on and on, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it is inspiring to know that, again, what we're having here is not just a discussion of getting the word out about the AIC, but the fact that progressive infrastructure has grown by leaps and bounds in the last few years, and that is... That's huge.
Somebody like Lee Fong?
Oh, yeah.
Reach out to him? I mean, there's so many different people, Bob. I mean, I guess this is what I'm saying. So a lot of people listening to this, this is my main point. I wasn't going to make this my main point for calling, but I figured we'd get this all out for this one call, Bob. I think that what people need to understand is if you're sitting at a computer and you have access and you can work your fingers and you can work your mouth and you have verbal skills, you can do something. Whether you think you can't, you need to snap out of that. You can focus on any writers out there that they have no idea what the story is. Think about this. There's a writer there who's juiced to get a story that hasn't popped yet, that is really progressive, and it's to his heart. But nobody's reached out to him and put it on his desk. Put it on his desk, people. Put it on his desk. All those names. Chris L. Hayes, Alternet, Raw Story, the list goes on and on. Tree Hugger, Balloon Juice? Digby?
Yeah, oh, Digby, absolutely.
I mean, so here's something.
Let me just kind of reiterate something here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like what I'm thinking, but
right.
I also have to acknowledge that I live in reality land.
Right.
Don't pitch this as an environmental story.
Okay.
This is a human rights tragedy that is unfolding. No, it's not a tragedy because we've had the discussion about the meaning of that word.
Right.
This is a human, it is the Appalachian Community Health Emergency. It is a human health, human rights crisis that is unfolding in central Appalachia even as we speak. You know, I was talking with Bo earlier today, because we try to talk at least once a day to make sure that everybody stays on the same page.
Right.
And I told him, you know, I was a little nervous when I traveled last month because, you know, I'd been in the hospital, the gallbladder, yada, yada, yada. And I was, you know, what the hell happens if I get sick while I'm over there? Oh, my God. And in fact, there were even some tweets to me saying, you know, Bob, I'm not saying, maybe this would be a great time for your gallbladder to get sick and get some of that socialized health care over there.
Yeah.
Well, you know what happened when I left Appalachistan?
I can only imagine you...
I quit hurting.
Yeah.
And nothing changed. Nothing changed. I mean, well, I got mugged and everything, but nothing changed.
Right.
You know, I was eating what I wanted. God knows I was incredibly busy, especially those first couple or 3 days. Whew, man. But nothing, I wasn't modifying my diet.
Right.
And it all quit hurting. You know, I was talking with a friend of mine who just happens to drive a white vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And he drives it back and forth from here westward to Charleston and points elsewhere. And he said, look, I've given up washing my car. Because if you drive this road, you just know it's going to turn black with coal dust. And we all deal with that from a wash your car standpoint, right, David?
Right.
Well, I mean, you don't, but...
Well, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, it took me a second, and I went, wait a God-blessed minute. If it's on your car, it's in your lungs.
Right.
And I don't just have myself to point to. The same thing happens to Agnes. The same thing happens to my family. The same thing happens to other people that I know who are sick around here. If you leave here, you feel better.
Mm.
It is that quick. And that's not an argument for leaving here. It's an argument for making this place better. I mean, Jesus, I was reading just today about a blackwater discharge in eastern Kanawha County, which is about 40 miles from here,
mm-hmm.
From a coal prep plant that had some sludge ponds at the toe of a leaking valley fill or a bad valley fill, and they discharged discharged gallons upon gallons upon gallons of black sludge, coal goo, into a local stream that empties into the Kanawha River. Again, if it's in the water, it's in you. If it's in the air, it's in you. And that's where disease and sickness and misery come from. And that is the sort of thing that the AIC Act specifically targets.
And that's where it connects back to a human rights issue rather than...
Precisely. I mean, I love the environment around here. I love the forests, what
right.
are left of them. The streams that aren't toxic. I love them. But if we don't address what's happening to the humans first,
mm-hmm.
then you get into that philosophical argument about if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it really make a sound? Because you can't appreciate what Appalachia was, what Appalachia is, or what Appalachia could be, if you don't have people to do the appreciating. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, when I look at what I mean, people take for granted where I live. in Maine. They take for granted that these forests will be around. We can visit their parks anytime we want. We can basically elect whoever we want. I've made this point to you before. Probably only 2% of the people in the building that I'm on the street that I'm on, vote. And I live practically, I live right next to City Hall. There's no excuse for nobody to vote, but see, that's the problem where we're at right now. That the apathy has become so large and so infected that we really need to start locking things down about what we want to accomplish in our lifetimes. And one of the things to me that's really important, and I catch myself saying this, is that rather than this be an environmental issue, these are human rights issues, and we need to put our foot down regarding this, because it is for your families, your future families, and generations and generations to come, if you want them to live in a stabilized...
In a non-toxic world.
Yeah. So, I guess I don't want to take too much of your time here.
Well, let me point out that Betsy has just written in. She says the AIC Act needs a Google Plus page.
There you go. See, this is what I'm talking about. This brings back to what I'm saying about everybody listening. If you're sitting there and you're in a space, you're in a funk, basically. We'll just use that word, even though funk can be great as well.
Yes, we love our funk.
Yes, we do. But if you are in a space of being depressed, you're not being inspired, and you actually can move your hands and fingers, and you have a computer, and you can actually type, and you can actually get your thoughts conveyed across on the digital matrix, then that's the place where you, Bob, this is the thing. As soon as somebody's motivated to do something, as soon as someone tells somebody, you're worth something, and you can do something, and you can make a difference in a way you never thought possible, even though somebody told you, maybe 2 days ago, maybe a year ago, who knows, that you were worthless. But that is so not the case if you are capable in the sense of being able to just type.
Yeah, this is an opportunity to close all of that, all of those loops of existential disconnectedness or discombobulation. This is a chance to get out there and do something that means a lot and makes a difference for thousands upon thousands of people, and even makes a difference. Well, you know, it's like the Iroquois Confederation used to say in their considerations of practice and policy. This is something that will make a difference unto the seventh generation.
And adding to that, you are becoming a fabric woven into a liberal and progressive history that you can look back. And your generations to come will admire and be glad that their family has been a part of this as well, which will inspire other people in the future if they have those issues as well, or issues coming at them, they will have something directly to look at.
Exactly. Exactly. This is a way of saying, you know, I didn't just treat this like dress rehearsal. I did something.
And just one thing before I go. These markers are important because they give a reflection of the time to come, the time that's passed, and when people look back at these times and they see that their ancestors actually had plans and plans in place and strategies, and didn't just take it down, just didn't take it lying down. That's going to inspire a whole bunch of people when there's that future roadblock that comes up to them. When they have to face those moments.
Exactly. You know, this is a template among other things. If we can start this struggle and succeed in this struggle, this is a template down the road for other tormented communities to see how it is you go about making them stop poisoning you.
And it's high time we do that. And I'll say this, as soon as I get off the phone with you, I'll hit up Cliff Schechter. I'll hit up a few people that just popped into my mind, and then we'll get started working on this media list that we can put together. the blog rolls and stuff. And if anyone wants to contribute names, we can put some names together. Maybe I'll just make I'll fire up the Excel and we'll put together a page where everybody can look at a database. You can download it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll put it up on a website or something, just so people are able to go to all those places that we mention in our conversations. And future people are going to mention in emails, but suddenly you have everything.
Maybe create a running list of what members of the House have been contacted.
Right, right.
From which districts?
As well, yes, and get like maybe a comments page where it says I had a positive reaction to this person. I had a positive reaction. This representative, they're not taking calls right now. That sort of thing. I mean, there's so many different areas where we can all connect and we can make something really inspiring for the future to look at and say, wow, these guys didn't have that much resources and we have a little bit more than them. I think we have a chance here of beating the odds this time.
We do. We really do. I think we can end this in the next year to year and a half. I really think we can.
Well, you know, that's the whole thing. The fact that we have so many people and so many liberals complain about the fact that we don't have the mouthpieces out there that we need. But if you look at, in terms of worldwide, what we have right now, it's pretty goddamn amazing if you think about it. All the people that you can contact and you can get something, you can get a response. Just a response. You can get a response in 2 seconds from somebody in Yugoslavia.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
So, the one thing I would suggest to people before I sign off is you really can do anything
that you set your mind to.
I mean, you'll make a difference regardless whatever it is you decide to do. Don't overstrain yourself. Don't think that it's all on me, that type of mentality. Just think, you know what, Bob? It might be a good time to cue that song. We're all in this together.
I love the way you think.
Well, Bob, as always, it's been great talking to you. We're going to have to get to some other stories another time, but I figured that it was important to put that out there.
I think you're absolutely right, David, and I thank you very much for this little brainstorming session. This has been amazing.
Well, you know what? This is the other thing. It charges people up in a positive direction, and when people hear us talking like that, It sparks different minds. It cultivates this kind of culture.
Yeah, there's nothing that says you and I have covered all the bases.
Right.
We do not. I mean, we do not have a lock on how on the right way to do this.
Right. Right. It's a perpetual battle. I mean, constantly we are going to be battling the forces that are against us, and that is why we constantly have to keep speaking out. We have to constantly keep getting engaged and motivated, and not so much getting so caught up in the drawbacks and the disadvantages that have come our way. We need to look at what we have across from a broad platform and realize, you know what? We lost at this. We lost at that. We didn't do so good at that. But look at what we made right here. Look what we were able to do right here. And look who were we able to start in on the growth process to learning about this area that they had no.
Yeah, and let's make no bones about it. I've been doing some belly aching this week. I did
right.
It last night and the night before. But this is a chance. This is a chance to work on something that is a net massive positive good that we can feel really, really good about going forward, and we've got a reasonable chance of victory.
And I think that's something that everybody can look at, and hopefully a lot of the people who are listening right now can just take what we said and maybe discuss it with their family members. Even people who just turn on the radio and you have no idea, because we have no idea who's just internet flipping. If you have no idea what the AIC Act is, look it up on the internet right now.
StopTheAIC.org.
StopTheAIC.org. That's the other thing. I guess we're going to have to, you're going to have to put a sticker on your forehead that says StopTheAIC.org when you go into town.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we need, and right now the AIC team is operating on an absolute shoestring.
Right.
We've had some support. Coal River Mountain Watch has supported it considerably. but it needs all the help it can get.
And that's the other thing. They can reach out to a phone number. I'm assuming at the
there's advocacy you can do along those lines. You can contact you could contact the Sierra Club and say, hey, you're sitting on $50 million for a Beyond Coal campaign. Why don't you kick enough money over to the AIC team to make it possible for them to really ramp up the work?
And that goes back to what we were talking about, the pressure, which is what we don't focus on enough. We need to keep focusing on pressure from every single angle. It is so crucial and so key, and it's why so many things happen in this world.
Right. I mean, you could contact Greenpeace and say, hey, you know, these people are doing the kind of work you believe in. Support them. Support the grassroots. Because this is grassroots. This is work that's being done by people who live in the shadow of mountaintop removal. These are not people who talk about mountaintop removal in some academic sense because they live a 500 or 1,000 miles away from it and think that it certainly is annoying and needs to end. These are people whose lives are directly impacted, David, by mountaintop removal operations that are going on right over top of their heads.
We can make someone aware today. Anyone listening right now, make someone aware in the media. Just pick somebody. Go to Digby. Here's what they can do. They can go to Digby, the Digby blog, Hullabaloo. You should just type in Digby in the Google search, and then just search the blog role that's there. And pick someone out. Anyone at random, whether it's Digby, whether it's anyone your heart's desire, and reach out to them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's where it starts. That's where it starts. The roots, and then from there, we can grow ourselves a garden of inspiration. So let's do that, can we, people?
Can we indeed. Thank you, David.
All right, Bob. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Stepping outside his ordinary brief of pop culture correspondent, that's David calling from Maine with a lot of good ideas about how we can advance the AIC Act. And how we can advance hope for Appalachian people tomorrow and generations to come. StopTheAIC.org is the website, just like it sounds. And you can also go to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and that's a really handy place to go and learn about these scientific peer-reviewed studies that have pointed and shown a light on the fact that Appalachian people are, in fact, being poisoned in the name of the mountaintop removal coal industry. You have the power to stop it. We have power that we have no idea we have. Yeah, I still maintain what I said last night about things like the process in Wisconsin. That was a system that was designed to yield a particular result. But we have a chance here to put a stick in the spokes of that system. I mean, the numbers are stunningly low. Only 1.6% of all the coal-fired electricity produced in the United States comes from mountaintop removal coal. We could end it yesterday, and nobody's lights would even go dim. It is only done for the sake of Wall Street profiteers. And I think even the pro-coal politicians understand that. It's just that they're terrified of those self-same Wall Street profiteers. You know, you may have heard a call from Chris, our buddy Psychoticus, from the chat room, where he ran down the numbers of what it means to ship, for instance, 375 kilotons of Appalachian coal to China and the money turnaround on it. That those tons of coal, whether it goes to India or China or a power plant in South Africa or a power plant in Europe for all that, yeah. That's not just coal getting on that boat. Those are children's lives. Those are the hugs that a child will never have from a grandmother who died too soon of diseases that were brought about by the profiteering of the coal industry. Those are walks by clear mountain streams that weren't taken by little boys carrying fishing poles alongside their daddies or grandfathers because daddy or granddad got sick and died too early because the coal companies have to have more profits. We can end this. And we can end this sooner than we imagine. But it does take you. So I hope you'll take David's words to heart and think about getting actively involved. And I liked his bumper music suggestion, so I'm going to take his advice. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division just doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together. City, we're all in this together. The city's changing, 'cause we are changing, and we're all in this together. Every 12 seconds, someone remembers that we're all in this together. In the kitchen of your rent control apartment, we're all in this together. Come on, baby, I don't mean to rush you. I only wanted to reach out and touch you. I've got to start to open my heart. I know you think about jumping ship before it sinks, but we are all in this together. Ask a scientist, it's quantum physics. We are all in this together. And on the subway, we feel like strangers, but we're all in this together. Yeah, I love you, and you love her, and she loves him, but we are all in this together. You know, baby, there's never been protection in all the history of human connection. Come on, darling, it's alright to show me you don't ever need to be lonely once you start. Open your heart.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Six and a half minutes past the hour, and the Friday on the Front Porch lines are open. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. You know, we're going into a weekend that's 2 days of enforced silence, and no chatting, no talking for 2 days, at least not on this program. So if you've got something to unburden yourself of, oh, Lord, that almost sounds like an altar call, doesn't it? Then by all means, pick up the phone. The direct dial number, of course, is 304-658-3333. I'm told by Dennis in Kentucky that we got the yard mowed today so that I had earned myself a cold one. Dennis and I mow the lawn there as needed. He pushes the mower and I talk in his head on the MP3 player. Happy to help out in any way that I possibly can. And a nice comment coming from Texas Betsy. Best David phone call ever. You got that, David from Maine? Best David from Maine phone call ever. And it was. All right, Jim, I'll do that as well. Thank you very kindly. Now, there are stories that I want to get into, but I also don't like keeping people on hold. So light them up if you want to. Hey, welcome to the program.
I just lit one up.
All right. Sounds good, Bill. What's happening?
I don't know, man. Congratulations on your European trip. I hope it did you some good.
I hope it did, too. And I think it opened some doors and made some connections. I met amazing people there, and we began to create that little global interconnectedness where we understand that the harm that these profiteering bastards do to one group is harm to another.
It all washes us all out is what it does.
Yeah.
Eventually. And, you know, it's Germany, I mean, that's where my people came from once upon a time, you know. And my grandmother was in tears in post-German surrender in 46 and such. She couldn't believe this had happened in the country she had left, you know.
Yeah.
Although the area she came from reverted to Poland after the war.
Mm.
Poland was dismembered twice by the three empires, Austria, Germany, and Russia.
Right.
And then, of course, by Stalin. I'm just working on a really good book called No Simple Victory. And this guy really, the facts and figures that he lays out, it's... All I can keep thinking to myself is a damn good thing Hitler and Stalin didn't like each other. Because, man, oh, man, if they had joined hands, oh, brother. Because it was a mess. I mean,
yeah.
The Russian army, I've heard there's a DJ here, an afternoon talk drive host, who was down talking the Russian army in World War II, and I'm just shaking my head and saying, you moron. These guys. For instance, something I didn't know, that Rokossovsky, who was a big general for Uncle Joe, had his wife in the gulag until he started producing victories.
Oh.
Nice guy. It's like, Jesus, what a bunch of maniacs. Well, we got him here, too. We got one guy, Mr. Raw Money there. He's just lying through his teeth.
Wait, what was that, Bill? Mr. Raw Money?
Raw Money. I forget who I heard say that first, but it wasn't me. I'm not that funny. If I was, I'd be out working tonight. Well, when I mix humor with my music, people always laughed when I played. That wasn't what I had in mind, you know. But, you know, seriously speaking, yeah, these people are unbelievable. And the laws they're pushing through in these congressional areas, these anti-abortion laws, and are they crazy?
Oh, and constitutional amendments to make it okay for the Christians to run red lights. I mean, gee whiz.
How do we stop these people? We don't have any more lions and tigers to turn loose on them. I don't know.
Well, you know, sometimes a counteroffensive is as good as a defensive strategy. And in a way, that's sort of the thinking behind the AIC Act, Bill, is that we need, you know, sure, you've got to defend against what these freaks do, but by the same token, you have to take the fight to them once in a while.
Well, I just hope to God my fellow citizens will have enough. Well, there he is again, that guy that I don't believe in. So let me hope there's something I believe in, which is, I'm not sure what that is anymore. Good beer, I suppose. But
well, you know what? That's suitable.
Yeah. Well, you know, I figured out who it was, when he's congressman, because I've known that guy since he's 19. He had just lost a race for Congress when he came to work for the, of all things, Dow Jones. I worked there, he worked there. That's a crazy combination of workers in that place in those years, in 68 or so. They're kind of a funny bunch. But, he is so good. I just had to talk to his office yesterday with the reference to this, our local transit system here and how bad it stinks. And it's happening all over the country from what my internet radio tells me. Transit systems all over the country are bad.
Well, transit systems are part of the commons, and by definition then, Bill, since it's part of the commons, it's something that the right wing absolutely feels compelled to disassemble.
Yeah. And then now the transit system that owned it 3 years before I was born, they sold it to the city of Cleveland because there was no money in it. And there are certain things that there's really no money in, so you need to have the commons run it because you need the tax supported because with price of cars today. You know, when I started buying cars, you could buy a new car, and most people were paying 3-year payments on them. And that was it. And guys were buying them every 4 years, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know what your area of the world, man, if you don't have a car, you better have a big thumb.
That's one of the questions that no one ever seems even remotely interested in answering around here, Bill, is what do we do about transit? What do we do about transportation?
Well, the price of automobiles and the number of people that, the group of people who are not able to afford them anymore, or people like me, Bob, if I drove down your street, you'd hear me blocks before you saw me. What's that sound of, was somebody running over trash cans or other cars, or what's he doing? One of those things. And that's just a simple, I mean, we were still running electric streetcars when I was a kid, and I went to Toronto in 76 and rode on some of the ones they had bought from Cleveland in 53. I was amazed, because I was one of those streetcar buffs and railroad, you know, one of those freaks, you know.
Well, imagine a little country mouse's response, that being me, to having the opportunity to get on functional public railroad, human transporting railroad in Europe.
Things. Yeah, it would go from city to city.
Yeah, these were fast son of a guns. The one that ran from Paris to Brussels was run by, it was called Thalys, Thalys.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it was Deutsche Bahn from Brussels to Frankfurt. And looking at the map, I didn't realize how long a run that was. But my God, we flew.
Yeah.
And because, you know, they've got these little digital displays up at the front of every car so you can look up and kind of keep up with where you are and what stop is next and everything. And I looked up and went, yeah, 310 kilometers per hour, and even though I'm not a metric guy, I knew that was pretty dang fast, even in miles per hour.
Well, Toronto was running into three cars they built up there now. They still have the ones, I was talking to the motor men, so they still have the old Cleveland cars, which were called PCC, President's Conference Car, designed after World War II to try to compete with buses. Very sleek-looking things. And he says, there's transit buffs from all over the world that come there and rent them by the day and ride all over Toronto like an amusement park ride. That's amazing. But, we used to get on a vehicle here and go to Erie, PA, or go to Detroit by high-speed rail in the 1920s. And then, of course, what killed that was the oil business, no doubt.
Yeah, well, look at the dismantling of the mass transit that Los Angeles had.
Pacific Electric, yeah. That was the undercurrent of who killed Roger Rabbit.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's because I do have to ride the darn stuff, and my vision is so, kind of poor. And it's good. It's better than a lot of people's, but, I don't know what I did. It might have been all those hours I spent on the water with no sunglasses catching fish. That's one thing I'll say for the Southern, man. I had a neighbor from Kentucky, man. He put me on to bass fishing. The last two fish I caught in Chautauqua were back-to-back casts using a black safety pin spinner this guy taught me how to use. And the first smallmouth I got was 6 pounds. The next one was 5'9".
Oh, smallies are fun to fish for.
Oh, man. And I said, I'll never do this again. Well, I haven't been doing much fishing since the eyes went bad. And that's like 11 years ago. So, In fact, I just got my amps and stuff back from a friend of mine I'm thinking about playing again, which is...
Oh, really?
Yeah. The money that these guys are getting paid for playing music is, when you base it on the cost of living, it's back almost to where I was in 66 when I started.
That's interesting you would mention 1966, and it's back to almost that. I don't know if you're aware of this, Bill, but Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. Just introduced a bill in the House that's backed by a lot of Democrats to raise the minimum wage to $10, $10 an hour. And the reason I was reminded is because the name of the bill is the Back to 68 Act. Because what a stunning little statistic this is, and that is this. If we raise the minimum wage to $10 an hour in the United States, it will return minimum wage purchasing power to the same thing it was in 1968.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's about...
Isn't that stunning?
Yeah. These guys are... Some of these guys, I'm going to hear some friends of mine tomorrow and do a little sitting in with them just to prove I can still play, I guess. To them, not to me. I know. Like, I sit here and do it. I play with these records. In fact, he does a good site called jams.com. And Ferg may be interested in this because you can pick out the kind of music you want to play with.
Is it JAMS?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least this is what I've been told. I have, I'll pick up records by Muddy and Albert King and just put that on there, put it on CDs and play with along with those. And those guys never make a mistake. I love playing with them.
Well, I know you are a practitioner of and lover of the blues. It just so happens that there's a good buddy of mine. He was my producer way back, when I was riding my dinosaur to CNN every day. His name is Roger Hurricane Wilson.
Oh yeah, I know who he is. Yes.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I think he played with some guys from Cleveland here for a while.
Well, he's out of the Atlanta area, but I mean, my God, what a guitar player he is.
There's so many good ones. There's a positive to every negative. Growing up in a housing project in the 50s, most of my, years, except for the four I put into the Catholic children's home version of, what's that classic movie, about the kids? I can't think of the name. I'm getting senile here. Lord of the Flies.
Oh, yeah.
That was Lord of the Flies with a religious accompaniment, is what it was to live out there. And people say, what did you learn? I said, I was a pretty good baseball player and football player, and God, did I learn how to fight rotten dirty. Beating some kid's head off a cement floor when you're 12, Bob, is not the way to go.
No. No.
I'm not a big guy, and that's why when I hear about people like these little rich kids used to come in. I worked 25 years at two bars in University Circle area of Cleveland, and we, of course, got a lot of the upper money kids. And these guys thought they could pull all kind of crap. With bouncers, one bouncer had served as a door gunner and a medic in Vietnam, and he was 6'4 and 250. I wouldn't argue with this guy over anything. And a couple of the other guys had done some time working for the state of Ohio in the pen. And they were some pretty tough boys. And I know they were always backing you up. And God gave me the wisdom or nature or something to know how drunk this other guy was that was messing with me. If he was real drunk, I could deal with him myself. And I enjoyed it. And I just wouldn't put up with their crap. These kids that thought they could come in and crap all over everybody in the world because their daddy had money. It was a real... I have a real problem anymore with these people. I get angry, and it's not good. It's not the right way to go. We're supposed to... The nonviolence is theoretically the way to go, but sometimes I wonder if it really is. With the upper... This book I was reading, working on, the guy covers the uprising in Warsaw pretty heavy, both the Polish and the ghetto uprisings. And you wonder... You know, can you hold still for these people? Could the Indians against the English, could they be nonviolent? And it was, these people had a point, these English people had a point where they wouldn't go.
And that, you know, that's ultimately the question that we ask in any historical context, but especially in between the clash of civilizations that have never met each other before. If one side, I mean, look at the Spanish conquest of Mexico, for instance.
Absolutely.
You did not have initially the Mexica people who were not, well, I mean, they were warlike. They were, that culture was almost as clamped down, tamped down, and generally repressive as the Spanish themselves. You know, both, I mean, sexually hung up and, you know, all that, whatever. But they did not meet the Spanish at the point of a spear. And in fact, they invited Cortes all the way into Tenochtitlan and welcomed him as, some say, possibly a returning god, but welcomed him as a stranger. And it was, so the question you have to ask is, even if one side is willing to be nonviolent, how does that shake out when the other side ain't?
Yeah, that's what I worry about with these people that are, you know, religious freaks. Because they've got this mystical...
Well, I mean, you heard probably, if you were listening a couple of nights ago, I had clips from two or three preachers from Kansas, from down south, from Indiana. You know, that little kid in Indiana singing, "Ain't No Homo Gonna Get Into Heaven." And the congregation just cheering like a bunch, like the freaks that they were. Now there's the story that breaks today that the multimillionaire... possibly billionaire megachurch preacher Creflo Dollar in Atlanta. Creflo Dollar has been arrested and was released on $5,000 bond for domestic violence for having grabbed his own daughter by the throat and choked her.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, there's your religion of the Prince of Peace.
A holy man, yes, sir.
Yeah, grabbed her holy by the throat.
Well, I'll give you a version of that happened in a church in one of the suburbs here about 20 years ago, and where my second wife went to school. And they caught these collection plate guys, you know, what you'd call deacons down the Southern Church.
Yeah.
I don't know what they call them. I guess they call them thieves up here because they didn't even throw the money up in the air. they were pocketing a whole lot of it, and they had cameras and cars.
That may be our first toaster of the evening, Bill. You call them deacons down south. I think we call them thieves up here.
Well, these guys, my second wife said, "Jesus, I went to school with those guys. They were young men. And now they're, you know, and they were in their 40s at this time, and they're helping themselves to the collection basket." The classic joke that my mother told me was a little Jewish salesman gets a car breaks down in the south somewhere, and he goes to a Catholic church on Sunday, and the priest meets him after church and says, "Mr. Goldberg, how did you like our services?" And the salesman says, "Father, I just can't understand how my ancestors ever let a great business like this get away from them." And, you know, it's a pretty good It's the truth.
Bill will be here all weekend.
Yeah.
Don't forget to tip your waitress. Try the veal.
Tougher than, you know. But anyway, you know, this. I hope Dennis can, and the company can get this thing, because they won't talk about it. That's the other thing that fries my hide. The media will not talk about anything. It's a different media since the Vietnam era.
Oh, look, the for-profit media are such, I don't even know how to refer to it, because it seems like, especially in the silly season of a political year, the only thing they can talk about is poll numbers and horse race themes. Yeah, ahead by this much, behind by that much. I mean, and the whole universe revolves around that. I got emails today, from both sides, from Romney saying, "Ooh, we outraised Barack by $17 million in May. Can you help us make sure we stay ahead?" And the other side, I got an email saying, "We were outraised by Willard Romney, by $17 million. Can you please kick in $3 to help make it better?" And it's all it is. And I recognize that money absolutely fouls our political system. I do, but there is more to it than that. There just is. You know, I mentioned a few minutes ago, Roger Hurricane Wilson. Well, the reason I heard from him was he's got a Kickstarter account up because he wants to release what I think will probably be an excellent recording. Do you remember who Willie Big Eyes Smith was?
Yeah.
Well, you know,
wasn't he with Muddy Waters?
He was with Muddy, and he just passed away a little bit back, right after he won a Grammy in 2010.
Yeah.
Well, Roger had been on tour with him, and Roger is trying to use Kickstarter to raise $6,000 to produce and release an album of the recording that he made. It's going to be called "Blues Protection" by Smith and Wilson.
Oh, cool, because I'm pretty sure Hurricane was traveling in a van or a bus or something. He had a Cleveland kid playing bass for a while. They were touring. Well, not. I mean, we're talking within the last 20 years.
Okay, yeah.
In that time period. I'm a guy that came out of that.
But I mean, I figured you'd know.
Thing, you know.
I figured you'd know who Mr. Smith was insofar as, you know, you're a harpist yourself.
Yeah, well, there were some great players in Muddy's band that were working after he was passed away. Speaking of which, Doc Watson.
Yeah, sad.
Another terrible thing for the music profession. He was a great performer. And because I ended up playing blues, but I came out of New Orleans jazz. I was a bad clarinet player. But the switch to harp was like a piece of cake for a clarinet player. And Butterfield was a big influence on so many of us in 65 and 6, you know. His band was the one that played behind Dylan when Dylan played electric. It was Paul's band, Bloomfield, Sam Lay,
right.
A bunch. And Barry Goldberg was on organ. And they kick-started me, and I kick-started it here in Cleveland. That's how I made that local Yokel Hall of Fame, and which bothers me to no end, because right now I listen to these guys playing, and I don't really care for most of them. Because they don't listen to the older fellas. Stevie Vaughan, I mean, he went right back to... I mean, you can hear him doing a thing called I Ain't Gonna Give Up on Love, and he sings like Bland and plays like Albert King, and, man, I don't know how much better you can get than that.
Not much. I don't know that you can.
With the best. But I was just damn lucky that I fell in the right place. It's like everything else. Right place, right time. Unfortunately, my first wife didn't think it was the right place and the right time, because I was there when that
culture clash, is that what we call that?
Yeah, when that SR started because of the pill and the more thorough birth control methods, that was a strange place to be, Bob.
You found yourself in some wrong places at some wrong times.
Well, I look in the mirror and say, how did that happen? I keep laughing. I have a health aide who's a young woman, and she just laughs her butt off, because when I talk about these things that happened in that time frame, and the whole thing, the anti-Vietnam stance that I had was that, hey, I'm an American citizen, and I don't see a damn thing in it for us. It's bad enough what we're doing to them, but what the hell are we doing for us? There's nothing there. We'll leave them alone. It's their country. And what do we gain if we defeated Ho Chi Minh? What do we get out of it?
Yeah, not much.
Exactly. And what I loved was General Yap telling a news conference one time that when asked to choose between the Americans, who were most of them in there for a year at a crack, you know, the draftees, and the French professionals, he thought the French professionals did a better job than the colonials, the Algerians, Moroccans, and foreign legionnaires. That's all they knew. Who was it that wrote Hell in a Very Small Place? Bernard Paul. He talks about a group of French legionnaires who had joined the Legion after they lost the war to Franco. And they had been in, this is 54, and they're still in. From 38, they had joined the Legion. That's all they know how to do is fight. And that's what's happening with these young kids in Africa and such. That's all they know. And it's horrible. You know, I just wonder, maybe those guys that talk about the flying saucers, maybe that's why when we need different people, we get Netanyahu talking to Ahmadinejad. And you get those two guys. Can't we get somebody who can reason? Why do we get this?
Well, you know what? It goes back to this, I think, Bill. Namely, that this, and it's again the for-profit media aren't giving it a lot of play. But the further you get up the corporate and governmental food chain, the higher the percentage of sociopaths and psychopaths you find within that given statistical pool. So that's how you wind up with Ahmadinejad and Netanyahu.
Guys who will fight over...
They're psychos.
They'll let you fight over anything.
What is that old saying? You know it.
Let's you and him fight?
Yeah, let's you and him fight over that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what really scares me, is because there are people in this country who will... You know, I follow that one blog site written by the... moderated by the retired Army colonel, who's an old man, but... Him and his people are so against war with Iran. And a lot of them are ex-soldiers.
Oh, God almighty, how stupid would that be?
Yeah.
I mean, what was the statement made last night? There are instruments that can barely measure the amount of stupid that would be in that?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, by the way, you got fan mail in. Kate just wrote in. She said, I love calls from Bill. His historical perspective reminds me of Studs Terkel. Now, that's pretty impressive.
Well, that is, because Studs was a guy that I read his, I loved his collection of oral histories.
And she said, we need more stories from days gone by, especially the music industry.
Well, the stuff repeats itself. It just repeats itself. I mean, most Americans don't know that the British were fighting in Iraq and after World War One, from 1919 to 1931.
Yeah.
They were fighting against insurrectionists. Because they took it over. Every place that these, between the French and the English, Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, Iraq, Indochina.
Is this one of those moments when we say that those imperialist urges, those colonialist urges could F up a one-car funeral?
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, they didn't F up a one-car funeral. They created a million-car funeral.
I agreed with reading. I've read a ton on the Korean situation, the Korean War, and I kind of agree with it because the UN went in and did something that the League of Nations was criticized for not doing in Ethiopia and in a few other places, that put a crimp on the fascists before they got rolling.
Yeah.
And
that's interesting, because when I realized where I was in terms of locale in Germany, like I said, I began it, when I first got there. I was barely in my own mind because I was so exhausted. But eventually, I began to get to pull it back together, and I began seeing street signs and realizing, you know, where we had pulled into in the first place. On the train from Frankfurt was Münster, and then seeing signs for Osnabrück, and my mind's going, what? I recognize that. And then it dawned on me after a couple of days' rest, you know, Münster and Osnabrück were the seats of the Peace of Westphalia.
Okay.
Which ended the 30 Years' War and created the very notion of the nation state that we are still debating to this day.
Yeah. Well, this book on World War II, There's No Simple Victory, he goes into what Stalin did with all these little groups of ethnic people in the USSR. and how he shipped them all over the, you know, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan. He took Tartars out of the Crimea, and he shipped them over here. He took, there was a 2 million or so settlement of Germans on the Volga who went into Russia when invited by Catherine the Great. And, of course, Stalin turned loose on them after, you know, Operation Barbarossa. But it's just insane when you see this stuff. You begin to wonder, am I nuts or are they nuts?
Yeah.
And it's starting to bother me. I must be getting old because I start questioning myself anymore. You know, it's like, well, maybe I'm nuts, Bill. Because this...
And that's when you just sit down. That's when you put the book down and pick the harp up.
Yeah, you have to, because either that or just put some music on and listen. Because I love listening to the greats, because they're the ones that taught me, whether they knew it or not. They all taught me something. And I got lucky. I worked with Sam Lay for a while, who was Butterfield's drummer, and also Wolf's and Muddy's. And that guy was a hell of a thing. And we spent one week. I brought my people down, and we worked with Cotton and Otis Spann on piano, and Cotton's wife and Sam Lay. I mean, not Cotton's wife, Spann's wife singing, and Sam. And it was a thrill to work with, and to shake hands with people like Muddy and that. And when I was a young guy, it was like, well, even more frightening was being a New Orleans jazz band. They brought some New Orleans bands up here in 62. I'll quit after this. And I'm talking to this older man who was 70, my age now, and he kept calling me sir, because he's out of New Orleans. And I finally told him, look, I'm 18 years old. I'm Bill. You're sir. And it turns out this bass player, Papa John Joseph, had been part of a band led by a trumpet player named Buddy Bolden. And I just learned that 6 months ago, that he'd been with Bolden. Because I just about said, holy God, a legend. Bolden was, you know.
Yeah.
He was the first of the king trumpet players of New Orleans, which were, there are many. Because that stuff is so fascinating. I have a big collection of that stuff from the 60s and stuff that was recorded in the 40s. But as I said, when it came to clarinet, the only time my hands moved fast enough was if there was a knife in one and a fork in the other, you know. Then they got around quick enough. But anyhow, let me let somebody else in here.
All right, Bill, it's been a magnificent conversation. Thank you very kindly.
And good luck with what you're doing, Bob, because it's got to be. I mean, because that poison eventually goes, they'll do it everywhere.
Yeah, that's
they're
the whole...
They're in Ashtabula County like crazy. There are earthquakes down around Youngstown that have come from that crap that they're doing down there. So you give these guys an opportunity to steal. I don't care if it's a guy in a dark car in a corner with a .45 or a guy with a $2,000 suit and a lot of fountain pens. They'll both steal. Anyway, you take care.
All right, you take care of yourself, Bill, and have a great weekend. We'll talk soon, I hope.
Yep, sure we'll. Take
Bye
care.
Bye now. That's Bill from Cleveland. Blues fans will know him, and Cleveland devotees of Cleveland's music world will know Bill as Mr. Stress. He's some kind of awesome, Bill is. Hey, welcome to the program. I got to have a producer. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
Listen, my compliments to your last caller.
Isn't Bill just something?
Well, just incredible. Handsome nostalgia. And, you know, my tastes are not confined to just Cole Porter and opera. That's for damn sure.
Yep. Yep.
But pursuant to what you were saying, you know, every morning I listen to Don Imus on Fox Business News, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And every Wednesday his wife's on there. And she is decrying all types of things that are just similar to what you're saying. And it's the Deidre Imus Environmental Health.
Well, I will get after that, Jim. Thank you very much.
I mean, she is the greenest woman in the world. And believe you me, I know Don Imus has a bad reputation with some people because of stuff that he's done and mistakes he's made. But, you know, he's a good man. He has that Imus Ranch for a kid for Cancer Ranch and stuff like that. And you just never can tell when you make a small crack in a wall just how wide that crack can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And she is a real proponent of the stuff that you've been saying. She really is.
And you know, it's if we Let me just say straight out, Jim, there will be an outreach made as a result of what you've suggested, because we're gonna take this and run with it. And I think based on what David was talking about earlier, I think we've got the beginnings of a real sort of open sourced group effort toward getting this bill not just introduced and not just sponsored, but getting it passed.
Well, that's good. You know, we have suffered defeats. We've just suffered defeats in California and in Wisconsin. However, so did the Russians in 1941.
Yeah.
And as your late caller, or your last caller, excuse me, mentioned Rokossovsky, he was one of the first generals to get to Berlin behind Zhukov and Katkov. And his wife was in a gulag. He's very right. I was really impressed by Bill and his knowledge. I really was.
Bill is a voracious reader, and you know, if you, it's one of those beautiful things that happens here inside the Horn family, because so many people are so multifaceted, Jim. Bill is really, really an honest to God master of the blues, among other things. And
I love the blues.
And then to turn around and just get schooled, straight up schooled on some of the history that he knows.
It's beautiful context. It's just incredible. I was very much impressed. Very much impressed. And also with that and his knowledge as well. You know, when you listen to older people, and there's a tendency not to do that in this country.
Oh, without a doubt.
You miss a lot of knowledge, and you can certainly circumvent a lot of mistakes
just by paying attention.
Exactly. And basically, I think what people are saying now is out of many, one.
Yeah. A pluribus unum.
That's what it's all about, Bob.
I think it is.
But anyway, I hope you have a good weekend, and I hope your daughter's doing well.
We're just waiting to see if the thyroid hormone levels are going to decrease, to find out whether or not surgery is involved, and it's a sort of a pins and needles situation.
Well, I'm facing some serious health issues myself, and I can certainly identify.
I'm sorry to hear it, Jim.
It is at that kind of time.
Please keep us posted, and let the Horn family in, because you're on what's going on, because you're very, very special to a lot of people.
Well, I thank you for that, and I appreciate whatever comments they've made to you. And like I say, you and I agree to disagree on a lot of things, but you know, I think we have certain common
comments. Oh, there are more commonalities, Jim, than there are differences.
Absolutely, and one of them is history and the failure to acknowledge the mistakes therein.
And how that guarantees the repetition of same.
And, you know, one more thing. In 1940, where was Great Britain at that time?
1940, struggling for its very existence.
You got it. They were facing an invasion. They were facing starvation. They were facing elimination. But 4 years later, guess what?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, these fascists, like these fascists who invaded the Soviet Union, who tried to make their own imprimatur upon the continent of Europe and the world, where did it end?
In ruin. But I guess the question from history for the present then is, what do you do, Jim, when you see them on the rise again? You know, I mean, that's the debate that I was told they're having in Germany right now, because the law says that if you get 5% of the vote, you get public funding of your political party.
You know, I don't know what it was in Germany and before Hitler's party gained recognition. Did they get that much tax money?
I honestly don't know. I don't know what the structure was under the Weimar Republic.
Well, the situation in Weimar was so fluid, and the currency situation was so terrible. I mean, it was like 4 trillion marks to $1. That's exactly what it was. At the very
yeah, I've seen that iconic photograph of the woman heating her home with a wheelbarrow of Deutsche Marks.
Or go to a bridge in Germany, and it will, I can't remember where it was. I think it's near Aachen. But there's the cost of that bridge in terms of marks at that time. And it runs three or four times the length of the entire bridge.
Good God.
Yeah, that's how bad it was. I mean, 4 trillion marks to the dollar. But, you know, the point of this conversation is simply this. It's darkest before the dawn. And there's always hope. Where there's life, there's hope.
Yeah, and I really hope I'd like to see a greater discussion, Jim, not just from you but from other members of the Horn family. Like I said, that discussion is going on, for instance, with the rise of the German Fascist Party, the NPD, whose stickers I gleefully helped pull off of light poles in a little town. But what do you, I mean? Do you suppress them? Do you stomp them out? What do you do with these racist hooligans in soccer stadiums in Poland and Ukraine, Jim? What do you do?
Well, you might not like what I'm going to say, but I'll just say it what I think you do.
Go ahead.
You kick them in the ass.
Well, no, and see, I don't necessarily not like that. I mean, I don't have any room in my world for a fascist. It's like a Klansman. What social contribution is there for a Klansman to make? And, you know, this runs up, or a fascist, this runs up against, you know, American concepts of freedom of speech and freedom of expression. But really, what contribution save for malicious vitriolic hate do they make to the body politic or the body social? What, Jim?
None. But they contain within their own movement, within their own hatred, the very seeds of their own self-destruction.
And that's true. But when they self-implode, at least if history is any indication, it takes a hell of a lot of blood and treasure to put them back in their place. So when you see them on their initial resurrection, don't you just stomp them? I mean, don't you? As Bob Marley sang, don't you kill it before it grows?
Well, for example, if we had stopped Hitler at Munich, we could have nipped that whole thing in the bud. We should have never let him get away with that, or the British should have never let him get away with that. And the collective security that was in power at that time between Russia and Great Britain and France were totally remiss.
And you know what? You can take that and extrapolate it backwards, Jim, to make the argument that had not a handful of recalcitrant right-wing, Republicans, isolationist senators not stopped the League of Nations treaty in its tracks, maybe the U.S. would have been a part of the League of Nations and would have had some say-so in helping or in trying to stop him at Munich.
Do you see
the argument that I'm making?
I do. That was Henry Cabot Lodge.
Yes.
Who sabotaged the very league and made it totally ineffectual when it was in fact the proposition of an American
drove Wilson to the point of exhaustion and stroke and death.
And you know Hitler made great he got a lot of mileage out of that the very president of the country could not even get the law passed or support get garnered for the League of Nations. I mean, that was one of the big points of his last pre-war speech of 23 April 1939, and mocking the forces that were trying to rally against him.
Exactly.
I mean, it really was. But nonetheless, there it is, and there you have it. And you have setbacks, but unfortunately, as I've said before, history is cyclical, and it just appears there's something within the human condition in which every 20 or 30 years we have to pick ourselves up off the floor bleeding and minus so much prodigy.
I've been this will be twice in one year that I've read The Guns of August. and the stupidity that presaged August of 1914 is simply stunning to behold. And, you know, that's just 100 years ago now. I mean, it blows my mind. As a child, I knew, and, you know, again, I'm not that old. I'm just 49. But as a child, I knew veterans of the First World War. And
oh, I did, too.
And exactly. And it's 100 years later, and here we are again in talk of an iceberg, ma'am. Right?
Bob, there are so many things that you can contribute to rote stupidity. And, for example, the involvement of Russia in World War One and what it cost them.
Yeah. Well, let me just offer up something that I think you might find interesting, just a comment that was made today by this strange little man who wants to be the President of the United States. Willard Romney said today that the United States doesn't, I emphasize the word, doesn't, Jim, Willard Romney said today that America doesn't need more firemen, more policemen, more teachers.
Well, see, that is a stupid remark. And
I mean, I heard you kind of take a beat there.
It stopped
you in your tracks, didn't it?
That's what I'm saying. When these people begin to make outrageous, stupid comments like that, there is one of the cracks, and there is one of the seeds of the own or the innermost part of their own self-destruction.
I mean, America doesn't need more police officers and more firefighters and more teachers, then may one simply ask what it is that Willard Romney thinks America needs more of? I mean, besides tax cuts. We know tax cuts. He says tax cuts in his prayers at night. But what is it that America needs more of, Jim, if not the very people who protect the society and the people who promulgate the society's very future?
Exactly. And why do you think we talked in the past about infrastructure in this country?
Yes.
And, you know,
I mean, do we need more roads? Do we need more bridges? Do we need more mass transit? Hell yes, we do.
We need not only that, but we need to improve what we have. Because it's coming apart.
Right. Yes.
And, you know, you whirled out of bonds in Germany. I mean, how many cracked roads did you see over there?
I don't think I ever heard the road make that thumpada 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 sound, Jim.
Mm-mm. No, you didn't.
And I was on some little two-lane affairs, too, and those things were like glass.
And in this country, good luck.
Oh,
you better have some serious shocks on your vehicle.
I got a 2 mile drive from here to the Rippy Mart, Jim. You know, for gasoline or and another 500 yards for a Subway sandwich. And I gotta dodge potholes from here to there. And that's not some crappy little West Virginia two-lane orphan road state highway. That is a U.S. highway. That is U.S. 60. Jim, that traversed at one point the entirety of the United States, or very nearly.
Right.
And I dodge potholes and hug the berm to keep from getting knocked off the road by monster coal trucks that have no business operating on roads built that way.
No, they certainly don't. Not at all. And you know, they give these roads over to these contractors, and I don't know what these contractors are made of. I can tell you what they're made of, but it's not polite to mention on the program. And they use the cheapest materials, and they gouge the government, and they don't have any quality assurance on the type of work they do. And I think, what is it, every 3 years they have to repave and do stuff like this?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, we're going back in history. But one of the reasons that Eisenhower came back to the United States and made a national limited access highway system one of the central foci of his administration was because the Allies attempted, and largely unsuccessfully, to destroy the Autobahn. They bombed it and bombed it and bombed it and bombed it and couldn't put it out of commission.
No, they couldn't.
Go ahead.
The Luftwaffe was using it for airfields.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of the most superbly built road systems in the country.
And yet, even in 1950s America, we could not simply say we need to have a series of limited access highways to connect the several states and enhance transportation and infrastructure. No, that had to be passed as a function of a defense bill, because it is the National Military Defense Highway System.
Right, exactly.
We couldn't do it unless we gave it over to the military. And that's why the interstates are designed the way they are. What, every 5 miles you have to have enough straight road to land an aircraft?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that was not that the Autobahn system in Germany came before Hitler. He just took that up from World War I Germany.
Yeah, that's the stuff that comes out of it doesn't go back as far as 1870, but you know, that's the kind of thinking that came out of Bismarck.
Exactly.
Who was a genius who does not get the degree of recognition he probably should.
Yeah, and one last comment about that, and I will say what Bismarck said about the Balkan situation that led World War I into where it was. He told that Kaiser, and told him again, he said, that whole mess over there is not worth the bones of
one Pomeranian grenadier.
And that's exactly what this crap is in Southwest Asia.
Exactly.
Listen, have a good evening, and more time to your callers, okay?
All right, thanks, Jim. You have a wonderful weekend yourself. Take care.
I'll try.
Bye now. Our good friend Jim, calling from not too awfully far from here. It's about 6 minutes before the hour. We'll probably take a little break here in a minute, but I want to go back to this comment from Willard Romney. This, what he said about teachers, firefighters, and police officers came in response to some remarks by President Obama, who said he wanted that he would like to see more teachers, firefighters, and police officers hired. Now, I'm no fan of the police state. And of those three, the teachers are far more important than the police officers, at least in my opinion. I would like to have more firefighters so that isolated rural counties in Tennessee don't have to watch their citizens' homes burn up because they forgot to send in the fire service subscription payment that month. But this begs the question. If Willard Romney does not want more teachers, firefighters, and police officers, then what the does he want? More hedge fund managers? More McDonald's workers? What does Willard Romney want? What does Willard Romney think this country needs? I go back to that Goober Gould from Arizona whose ad we went over last night. We want the government out of our lives. All right, well, we'll just blow up the dams, Goober. And we'll let the Colorado River revert to being the Colorado River, and that goddamn desert you're living in can revert to being the goddamn desert that it is, and you don't need no drink of water, Goober. And we'll just stop that periodic maintenance on those interstate highways because you want the government out of your life, right, Goob? Yeah, see, Marty's like me. He says, certainly we need the firefighters and the teachers. The police I'll have to think about. He also adds, I'm certain Sandra can point out to you the quality of Interstate 80 and 5 through the Sacramento area. But if he does not want more teachers, more firefighters, and arguably more cops, what the hell does he want? I would like to know, just once and for all, beyond the stupid platitudes of shining cities on hills and people draped in flags that are wearing magic underwear under their clothing, beyond all of that stupidity, what does he want? I want a straight-up picture of Willard Romney's America. Because I think if he were to actually tell us what it was, it would be an America that none of us actually wanted. This is the quote from Willard. He wants another stimulus. He wants to hire more government workers. He says we need more firemen, more policemen, more teachers. Did he not get the message of Wisconsin? The American people did. It's time for us to cut back on government and help the American people. Well, how the f*** do you help the American people without teachers? Sweet jumping Jesus. How do you... I guess we're just going to let the Mormons teach us all, right? Maybe we'll just do what Jerry Falwell said a couple of decades ago and return education to the religious community where it belongs. Somebody needs to ask Malloy to holler down to Satan in the basement and see how Jerry's getting along. What the... Almost did it. What does he want? What is his vision for where America will go? Because you can't convince me for a minute that somebody who's got a master's of business administration and a damn law degree from Harvard can actually sit there and really, really, really think that if you just choke the government to death, America will be a better place. Because it won't. It will be effing Haiti. It will be Rwanda. It will be Somalia. With cable. What does he want? I mean, it brings tears to my eyes to think, I mean, because, it, you know, it happened on that trip, and I don't mean to talk about, I'm certainly not bragging. That was a life-changing journey for me. Because I really did get to turn around and look back at my homeland at a distance. And you know what? Sometimes you see more clearly at a distance than you do when it's right up in front of your face. And what I saw scared the shit out of me. But first and foremost, I sat over there thinking. Because among other things, the house where I stayed had been a house of artists and painters and poets. And you could feel their spirit all over the place. And I'm not one of those who goes in for feeling spirits. At the far end of the garden was a statue of Hercules taking on Cerberus. You know, the dog, the multi-headed dog that guarded the entrance to the underworld. And he had a club in one hand and had one of Cerberus's heads by the other. And I reflected on the, you know, that's the nature of our struggle, because our struggle has so many heads. You might think that you've got the warmonger head there by the scruff of its neck, and you're getting ready to whack it when the corporate profiteering head turns around, and the next thing you know, it's gnawing on your damn ankles. It is difficult. No one said it isn't. Blood, tears, toil, and sweat? Was that what it was? Is that Jim talking about the difference between 1940 and 1945? Nobody said this was going to be easy. But God Almighty, when you've got this prattling white little weirdo out there, the Willard Romney talking about we don't need more teachers in the United States? Jesus Christ, if there's two things in this country we need more of, we need more nurses and we need more teachers. And there's absolutely no goddamn debate about it. And then Chris Krispy Kreme Christie came out and said, yeah, he's right, Willard's right, we are on the right path to getting rid of all those nasty teachers and firemen and policemen, more government workers. See, that's one of those Frank Luntz moments, more on him in a little bit. You don't call them firefighters and teachers and police officers, you call them government workers.
Because we want the government out of our lives.
Right. You know what? I like government. Because I was raised to actually see government not as some distant thing, but a function of my participation in it. And that if I didn't, I mean, you know, this is the stuff they teach the little kids. And some of that Pollyanna idealism yet remains secluded in some little corner of my existence, my being. And I take it out every now and then, and I show it the light of day, and I go, it's okay, baby, we'll put you in chat again soon someday. But that if you want positive change, that there is a government here that you can petition for redress of grievances and hopefully solve that problem. That's why the AIC Act is out there. Because it is a good faith attempt by people to get a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And don't send me the emails about Citizens United. I know! But it is a good faith attempt by aggrieved people to petition the government of the people, by the people, and for the people for redress of grievances. Yeah, Marty noting, better yet, residents in rural Tennessee shouldn't have to send in an annual subscription payment for fire protection. I agree. Why the hell don't they have a... Why? Why? You know, this is one of those moments that was referenced by Robert F. Kennedy when he said, some people see things as they are and ask why, and I see things as they should be, could be and ask why not. Why can't somebody in rural Tennessee know that it doesn't matter whether they've coughed up their fire subscription fee or not, that if a fire breaks out, they can pick up the phone and they can call the fire department who will come and put out the fire? This is not rocket science, but this is the world of which Willard Romney heartily approves. Texas Betsy noting, we also need teacher trainers, mentor teachers, and people in the schools who work with families. But I guess, Betsy, that's communism, right? Those are government workers. Our little right-wing friend Chadwick writing, is there anything that the Republican that you don't blame the Republicans for? Who wants less teachers? Who wants less police officers? Who wants less firefighters? Who wants houses to burn down in Tennessee and roads to be ground up into gravel in North Dakota? Who wants that? The answer, I think, is fairly simple. God, this Friday on the front porch is flying by. It's 5 minutes past the hour. We better take a break. I mentioned my good friend Roger Hurricane Wilson a little bit ago. Let's try a little something just randomly. Bluesman, Roger Hurricane Wilson.
Well, I want to shout. I want to do what goes right to me and nobody else. Well, you know that I feel so good today. I want to tell you my story. I got a whole lot to say. Full speed. Back and never got us anywhere, anyway. Well, don't you know
final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Thank you, B-Rez. 12 minutes past the hour. This Friday on the front porch, rapidly slipping away. Another gentle reminder, seeing as how the first one apparently didn't do much good. This is listener-supported radio. Remember, when you contribute to the horn, you're not just making it possible for yourself, you're making it possible for those who cannot contribute, and there are a lot of you. And I understand that. We stay about brokered in the Ten Commandments. Poor as Job's turkey. I've read Job up and down, and I've never seen a blessed thing about his damn turkey. Lots of camel and sheep and oxen and so forth, but not his turkey. But I heard that growing up. Poor as Job's turkey. It's still been a mighty poorly turkey. But this is listener supported, and the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks going out to our good friend Preston, the Horn's resident optimist. Just posted the photo of the address at Deutsche Bank on his Facebook page. Thank you for that, Preston. I do appreciate it. And this is Friday on the front porch. This is especially in light of the fact that I did a 3-hour callerless filibobster on Monday. I've been feeling guilty about that ever since, and trying to create enough space for folks to call in and get said what needs saying. Which Manhattan Transfer song, Jim? Jim enjoyed Roger Hurricane Wilson's last tune there, Full Speed Ahead. That's from Roger's album Exodus. You'll have to let me know which Manhattan Transfer song, Jim. The lines are open for this Friday on the front porch. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Treason. Traitors. I mean, what do you say about somebody who deliberately plots the sabotage of the underpinnings of the United States, who deliberately takes action against the United States? Treason? Is that appropriate? It is the only crime that is actually defined inside the Constitution of the United States, you might recall. Lottie sent this along to me. It's a post from Daily Kos, from a diarist there by the name of Keep 'Em Honest. It was posted today. Headline, Eric Cantor, Paul Ryan, and Kevin McCarthy plot to sabotage U.S. economy with Frank Luntz. It goes back to a meeting on January the 20th, 2009. And it is the reportage comes from a book by Robert Draper called Do Not Ask What Good We Do Inside the U.S. House of Representatives. It was a 4-hour invitation-only meeting with GOP Minister of Propaganda Frank Luntz. Here's the list of the Catalines. Frank Luntz, Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Pete Sessions, Jeb Hensarling, Pete Heekstra, Dan Lundgren, Jim DeMint, John Kyle, Tom Coburn, John Ensign, and Bob Corker. Non-lawmakers present, Newt Gingrich. Here's what they discussed during that 4-hour meeting. How to bring Congress to an absolute standstill, and how much damage they could do to the American economy by obstructing and blocking every blessed thing that President Barack Obama proposed. It was, as the diarist Keep 'Em Honest notes, literally a plot to sabotage, undermine, and destroy the U.S. economy. Will this be covered on the CBS Evening News? Will ABC have this on its evening news coverage? How about NBC? Because it goes without saying that if it's mentioned on Radio Rwanda, otherwise known as Fox, it will be mentioned as being worthy of praise. What do you do? How do we address that? Yeah, as Lottie notes, they also referred to themselves as the Taliban. These Republicans. Now, that's not some mean liberal calling them the Taliban. That is them calling themselves the Taliban. You know, all this time, every time Barack Obama would negotiate with himself and then find himself having his rear end handed to him by the Republicans, a lot of us would look up and ask, well, God, doesn't he realize that this is what they're out to do? I mean, this story is put out there as sort of the spectacular or sensational. But, Jesus, we heard Jim DeMint of South Carolina saying that he wanted health care to be Barack Obama's Waterloo. As if Barack Obama was some height-challenged Corsican. We heard him say that. But Willard Romney says he doesn't want any more teachers, doesn't want any more firefighters, doesn't want any more policemen. And these guys say that they actually want to sabotage the American economy just to get one man out of the White House. How pathetic. How un-American. Yeah, Lottie, I agree. It's treason in my book, says Lottie in the chat room. Too true. Too true. But if there was ever any doubt, and I'm sure there wasn't among the vast majority of the Horn family, let that doubt be dispelled. They are anti-American. Hell, they're anti-human. It appears the only thing they care about are little unborn wads of cellular material, little not even babies yet, pieces of tissue. It's the only thing you can find them really getting worked up about, isn't it? Yeah. It is Friday on the front porch. It's 20 minutes past the hour, and let's do some conversation radio. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston, I conjured you.
Yes, you did. And I was delighted to be able to share that great photo of you in Germany. I caught bits and pieces of your travels and your efforts through your postings. Was it over Twitter were you using?
Yeah, I was using Twitter.
And I just kind of assumed that the Deutsche Bank address had to do with some financing.
Yeah, they finance mountaintop removal, but their head man told me that I should not believe my lying eyes when we had the data that said they financed mountaintop removal.
Okay.
And because they don't do it because he's from Switzerland and they love mountains in Switzerland. No, that really is the explanation that he gave. I'm not kidding.
They'll say anything. They really will. And so many industries, it's just endless deceit. Recently I've been getting into work of people like, there's a lady named Naomi Oreskes or something like that. She wrote a book called Merchants of Doubt. And she goes into the communication strategies of various industries. And she traces the roots of it from the tobacco industry lies, you know, the decades.
Oh, yeah.
Of that suffering caused and the deception. And then some of the same people have moved on to climate change issues. And fascinating study of how they work it. And, yeah, no lie is too big, that's for sure.
No, the bigger the better, really.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, or they'll utilize some front group or some other organization or individuals to duck responsibility. You know, the right wing's always going on and on about personal responsibility, but, boy,
yeah, the minute you want them to take some of it, they don't like that medicine so good.
Yeah, corporate responsibility. No, free market. Let me free. Oh God.
you do that all too well, Preston.
Speaking of free markets, I was just in the process of posting something else. I was going to put it up on your Facebook page, and I will after we finish. But there's a lot of media, progressive media out there being developed. I mean, we get so irritated with the liars and the Fox News propaganda and sometimes the CBS News and NPR propaganda as well. Although the NPR certainly has some wonderful moments. And I can't say that about Fox News very often. Although even there, I hold out hope.
Well, but that's your job, Preston.
Yeah. Well, here and there, Bill O'Reilly, of all people, will do something okay. So, I don't know. But anyway, but the progressive media, you know, if we give that the same kind of attention that we give the stuff that we don't like, I think it will just, I don't know, make us feel better about things. At least it does me. And one of the, you know, of course, Democracy Now!, every time I tune into that show, it's grown by another 24 stations, including places like East Tennessee University, kind of like
nice
neck of the woods. Yeah,
what is that, Johnson City?
I believe so. I came across it when I was visiting my dad in Asheville, North Carolina. And
I get the notion, because I know a couple of parents who've sent their kids there. I get the notion they do some pretty daggum good work at ETSU.
I believe so. I'm not really familiar with it, but I had a great time tuning into their little college radio station. And they just actually started to air Democracy Now! Because, you know, something like 12 listeners got together who had knew of it streaming, but they wanted it on their college station as well. And so they did a little note to the station managers, and I heard the station during the middle of a fun drive, and they were like, we were approached by about a dozen of our listeners, and we weren't sure how this was going to go over, but this has been one of our biggest programs for fundraising. You know, I got that much popular support. And so in moments like that, I'm reminded, you know, people do care, and people are making an investment, you know, as frustrating as it can be. And you know, not large enough. It's happening here and there for sure. So, you know, Democracy Now! Is thriving today. In the mail, my dad, who oftentimes is sympathetic to right-wing causes, and it breaks my heart, but today in the mail, he sent me a magazine from Duke University's environmental program, which is really sensational. And they just got back from touring mountaintop removal sites.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, I might have to send this along to you or send you some kind of link.
Yeah, there is one of the researchers that has done some of the seminal work on the environmental impacts of mountaintop removal comes from Duke.
Okay. Yeah, that would make sense.
And she has worked closely with Dr. Margaret Palmer from the University of Maryland.
Excellent. And we can only imagine the flack some of these people receive.
It is stunning. The filthy little coal-fired assault on one of the researchers who happens to work at West Virginia University has been absolutely disgraceful.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. And the threats of getting funding revoked, and there again, there's a lot of corruption to look at, and it's very disturbing. I think there are a couple books like, you know, University Incorporated or College Incorporated, stuff like that, about the increased privatization and influence of private money and what has been a really wonderful system of higher education in many ways, a lot of incredible innovation. You know, some of it I wish took a different direction for sure, but still, you know, our public universities helped develop the internet, which has been a wonderful tool in many ways. Places like MIT and Caltech.
Yeah, I'd be standing out in the backyard screaming without the internet.
There you go. You know, and that fact, again, exposes one of the big lies about this. Oh, it's private industry. It's John Galt or whoever.
Yeah, and see, that. I mean, these questions, what, really, Preston, what is it that Willard Romney wants if he doesn't want more teachers?
That's a good question.
I don't ask that rhetorically. I would really like to know what he thinks American is, because obviously Americans need to go back to work, right? I mean, can we take that as read?
Yeah.
So if Americans need to go back to work, what do they need to go back to work as? Ditch diggers? Is that Willard's answer? A nation of ditch diggers? And that's no slur on people who dig ditches. That's hard, brutal work.
Yeah.
But we don't...
It'll be narrow. They want some teaching to continue, for sure, but they want to define...
I mean, if we told him that all the teachers were going to teach little five, seven-year-olds the economic principles of selfishness as set forth in Atlas Shrugged, would he then want more teachers, Preston?
Yeah. And Romney certainly doesn't want ditch diggers to lay the XL pipeline that he says is going to be the first...
And he doesn't want them to be union ditch diggers.
No. And, you know, generate more business for Caterpillar and that tar sands mining operation.
Yeah, Marty just wrote in and said, I think Willard wants a nation of Wally World greeters. Welcome to Walmart. Fries are done.
Yep.
Fries are done.
Yeah, it'll be that on one end, but there will be kind of an elite, place for science, the science of, petroleum sciences and, nuclear weaponry.
I mean, it reminds me of something that Dr. John pointed out a couple of months back when Governor Rick Scott in Florida decided to tell the world that Florida universities didn't need to be churning out any more anthropologists or sociologists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that kind of learning that they're really trying to get rid of. You know, look at the agricultural sciences. I went to an ag school, a land-grant school, CSU, Colorado State,
sure.
Fort Collins. I saw beginning there the pressure from Monsanto and Cargill and to, keep the monoculture and the genetically modified stuff charging along. People are trying to do some of their own independent work, and I read an article recently about a grad student, wanting to do some research into organic farming and farmers markets and being told by a professor, if you want money for your research, make sure you do something about the benefits of genetically engineered seed or something. Otherwise, you're going to have to try to fund it yourself. And that's where this huge student debt comes into play. That debt, again, in so many ways, can be a system of control and making people desperate.
Well, yeah, look at people coming out of, and I just say law school because it's the first thing that comes to mind. Well, if you come out of law school with a quarter of $1 million in debt, you are not going to go to work for legal aid.
A few will, amazingly, but most likely, yeah, the pressure will be severe to go work for, Clarence Thomas. He worked for Monsanto, and now look where he is now, on the Supreme Court making decisions about Monsanto. What a deal.
It's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but again, there always seems to be this at least equal, or maybe not equal, but existent opposite trend. And every time I turn around, there's a new urban garden popping up, a new farmer's market, CSA.
And I guess the First Lady has a book out about home gardening now.
There you go. I knew she had something going on because I tuned into a few moments of Limbaugh, and he was really focusing on her, pointed some of his hate in her direction, mocking her, making fun of her name, just churlish.
Wait, making fun of, what's funny about Michelle Obama?
Well, he'll say like Michelle or Mouchelle.
For God's sakes, why doesn't he just go to a European soccer match and start making monkey noises?
Yeah.
It's the same thing, isn't it? Isn't that the same thing?
If you watch the Limbaugh TV broadcast, I half expect to find him throwing his poop around his studio. And
See? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we're on the same track.
So I was like, I wonder what she's doing to something good in the world, no doubt, because she's being mocked by this being. And, yeah, she's got this book out, and I heard her discussing part of it recently, and it's the gardening, it's the cutting back on the crap food for kids, and I think she had a lot to do with pressuring.
Oh, well, yeah, and did you know that Michael Bloomberg's going forward on supersized sodas in New York City? Did you know that's communism? I just found that out via right wing press releases that I get in my inbox on any given day. It's communism, Preston. And there's and the American Soda Association wants you to go to the American Soda Association .. and learn the truth about high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
Taken in moderation, it's just like sugar.
Right.
But if you have to tell me to take it in moderation, that means it's just like booze.
That's right. It's just raising awareness. And apparently, 7-Eleven has some loophole, and they'll still be able to sell their mega gulp or whatever. But again, it's the action that's a message, a very powerful message itself, and I think it's been needed. I mean, you would love to have responsible corporations maybe offer some healthy food here and there, but if they're not going to do that,
well, it's like the fascination I had with. Looking at the Coca-Cola label in Germany, not being able to find, you know, I can pick out words here and there. I'm not so much with the, you know, the 19 word compound noun things. That's just too much. But I kept looking through the Coke can label, and all I saw was Zucker, which is sugar. And I said, "Where's the high fructose corn syrup?" And my guests, as they learned to do, or my hosts, as they learned to do over the course of a week, looked at me as if I'd lost my mind, and they said, "The high who what?" I said, "High fructose corn syrup." You know, they take corn syrup and they put it through a process that's very similar to the way that you distill, distill gasoline from crude oil, and they frack it and they crack it, and they yield up this high fructose corn syrup that we use in the United States instead of sugar. And I got the look again.
Interesting.
And there is no such thing. No such thing as that would ever be allowed in Germany. No such thing would be allowed in the European Union. This is madness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quickly informed that the vast majority of the sugar that's used in their pop soda pop beverages, which they didn't drink much of in the first place, mm-hmm. Because they kind of despise the Coca-Cola Corporation because of the predator it is.
Yeah.
That it's beet sugar. It's just beet sugar. Sugar beets.
Oh, good. Yeah, good.
And you know, I didn't.
Farmers, you know.
And I did have my. I had my eye peeled. I was paying attention, because I was looking for people that looked like Americans. You know, obese.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see them. I just didn't see them. Now, granted, I wasn't all over the countryside or anything, but I saw a lot of people. I mean, there were 5,000 people in that room at the Deutsche Bank meeting. There were again as large a number in the Commerzbank meeting, as many people in Societe Generale and Crédit Agricole in France. And I didn't see anybody that looked American.
Yeah, that's interesting. And
I don't think they've got the obesity epidemic over there that we have. And it's not just because, Preston, and I think this is an important point to make, it's not just because Americans sit around eating and not doing anything.
Right.
I think generally European people probably are more active than we are, and because they've got an infrastructure for it. I love it. Even the sidewalks have a bike lane on it, and there are little cool pictorial signs that tell you that, you know, it shows a mommy and a child walking to the right of the sidewalk and a bicycle on the little different colored brick path on that part of the sidewalk.
Oh, fantastic. That's fantastic. And they've got a lot more leisure time.
Right, and but it's not just because of that. They are not subjected to the same poisons in their food that we are subjected to.
Yeah. It's, you know, we've got a toxic food system, a toxic work schedule, toxic media. You know, I bet Germany doesn't have the same skyrocketing rates of diabetes.
Absolutely not. I asked that question specifically. Is there a terrible, terrible, terrible problem in the EU with childhood diabetes? And I got the look.
Yeah, yeah. But again, you know, for, you know, one human disaster, you know, one person's human disaster or one society's human disaster is another, is some business's profit growth. And, you know, the diabetes treatment people and the cholesterol.
Diabetes, you know, is good for the free market, isn't it, Preston?
Right. Again, you got to just let that market be free. And so you said 5,000 people were in that Deutsche Bank?
Yeah, something like that. It was huge.
You've probably told the story already, but real quickly, how did you manage to get in there? Well,
there is a magnificent group that does work in Germany called Urgewald, and they focus their efforts on the predatory lending practices of German banks.
Yeah, great.
And so they and other allies purchase shares, and at shareholder meeting time, they assign them to people like me,
mm-hmm.
who are then allowed to get up and speak in the meeting.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And did they let you say your piece, or were they...
It started out that everybody was going to have about 10 minutes to speak, and then after an entirely self-serving round of valedictories and whatemecums and whatever... on the part of the outgoing director, everybody found out that they'd been cut to 5. And then they cut from there further back. But we got the message out, and we know we got the message out because it was so virulently resisted by the director of the bank. Oh, we don't do that. I'm from Switzerland. Yeah, okay, yodel for us. Yeah, whatever.
Well, congratulations. That's
right.
Fantastic.
Bully for you. But the fact is, we had the data before us. Deutsche Bank gave a revolving line of credit. You know, not just a one-time loan. They gave a revolving line of credit to Alpha Natural Resources, the single largest, most predatory practitioner of mountaintop removal in the world.
Actually, I was sending that congratulations to you.
Pulling
that off. Yeah, that's great. You know, hopefully your allies in Germany will keep in touch and maybe call into the horn and, you know.
Oh, I'd love to hear from some of them. I hope that it works out that I may be going back in the fall and perhaps again next year about this time to talk to some more of the banks, because it is astonishing when you find out, and again, it's a reference, Preston, to the, you know, to the global issues or the global nature of this whole process, where all the money comes from in order for this pillaging of the common heritage of Appalachia to take place. It comes from French banks, it comes from German banks, it comes from Swiss banks, it comes from Scottish banks, it comes from American banks, it comes from the British banks, UK banks, Dutch banks, Spanish banks. You know,
does it come from the World Bank? Do you know, or IMF?
I don't know about that, but I do know that the U.S. Export Import Bank recently financed the export of coal for the first time in 5 years, and
yeah.
Just, you know, one of those moments with the Obama. You know, that's where the Secretary of Jesus Christ, Barack, what were you thinking? Comes up and kind of smacks him on the back of that. What are you thinking?
Yeah. It, you know, again, we need to differentiate between Obama and, you know, the power elite, you know, because
yeah.
There's a lot that I'm sure he in his heart and mind would love to do very differently, but, you know, he, like a lot of us, are very kind of imprisoned by this corporate empire. And
like I said with Albert the last couple of nights, I would love to see one of those EPA drones fly over and take pictures of a mountaintop removal site and just send it back to Barack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. You know, I think people, the importance of a, you know, democratic administration, even with all its problems, and they're severe, still, there are people oftentimes that are appointed by a person like Barack, and they can be a mixed bag. Stephen Chu comes out of the, you know, nuclear establishment big time, even though he does advocate some renewables, but largely he's a nuke person. Then Obama's own Exelon connections and Illinois being, you know, they have more nuclear.
We're going to make Southern Illinois the Saudi Arabia of coal. 2 weeks later, he was in West Virginia or Pennsylvania. We're going to make Pennsylvania the Saudi Arabia of coal.
Yeah, but there are some people further down the rung that sometimes, you know, do more radical things. I remember seeing some EPA people from the Clinton administration, I think it was, and they were on C-SPAN, and boy, they're bringing a much more radical message than I was expecting. And
a lot of those folks know what's going on. They are hogtied by process. They are hogtied by the administrative state. They are hogtied by their desire to continue putting food on their families.
Yeah, well put.
Yeah. And by the way, a note coming in, you'll find this interesting, a note coming in from Texas Betsy. She says, I'm teaching Japanese students right now who left Japan after the earthquake, and get this, Preston, they consider genetically modified food to be only a slightly smaller risk than radiation.
Interesting. Yeah. And back on the nuclear front real quickly, real recently, there's been a very big push by the industry to promote something called thorium reactors.
Oh, I've heard about those, yeah.
It's the new amazing product from your friends in the nuclear power industry. And it was this one author in particular, he wrote a book called Superfuel. He was on NPR. He was on all the commercial stuff. He was on C-SPAN. He was on the community radio station. He was getting Facebook, you know, support, all that stuff. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting for a critical voice to come around. And I found a couple. I'll mention one of them that I think is key on a lot of these issues and a real hero of our day, Helen Caldicott.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and more, you know, she's been campaigning against this stuff and against the nuclear testing, which was, you know, making U.S. citizens not safer, but making them victims of being downwind of these tests and contaminating soil and, you know, massacring all the turtles in the desert and all that stuff. Just madness. And she wrote the book, Nuclear Madness, and she wasn't being hyperbolic. But more recently, she's got a radio show called If You Love This Planet, and it's been going for about 2 years. It's on several community and college radio stations around the country, and you can stream. It's, you know, they have the podcast available on the web, and it's a one-hour weekly show, and her most recent show was on thorium. She had this brilliant guy who's a nuclear engineer. His name's like Arjun Machiati or something like that. He's an Indian guy. And very calmly and reasonably tore it apart. And the whole, you know, that it produces radioactive waste. You have to have these reprocessing plants next to the thorium reactor, and thorium doesn't ignite itself. You have to use uranium to start the fission process. It's a whole mess. It's going to be billions and billions and billions of dollars. That's going to push solar and wind off the table. And so check it out if people get a chance.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I keep coming back to that. All those wind turbines I saw, all those solar panels I saw. And then the next to last day I was there, I get shown this open cancer of a cesspit lignite mine. And it's like, God, you've got it all figured out. But again, it wasn't, you know, it's not because the nation necessarily needs all that filthy coal energy. It's because there's money in it.
Yeah, they don't see, you know,
this thing is square kilometers wide, and it's going to eat up, it's going to literally, by the time they've expanded the old permit, it will have eaten up 5 1,000-year-old villages, Preston.
Yeah, you know,
where the village was is going to be a hole in the ground.
Right, but these execs, they don't see villages and forests and streams. They see dollars.
Or euros.
Yeah, euros.
I mean, let's do remember, I want to drive that one home a little bit. This is not just about American business. It is about the fact that the 1% are the single most the non-committed people to any idea of nationality on this planet. Their commitment is to their investments. Their commitment is to their finances. Their commitment is to their money. Not to any sense of national place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's very true. That's very true. On the brighter side of this industrial world, while you were in Germany, you probably saw the news that I think it was 2 weekends ago Germany was running on 50% solar.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's without calculating in the wind.
Okay.
And they didn't turn the wind turbines off at that point. Those were still slowly, gracefully turning in the breeze.
The efficiency measures, I'm sure they're starting to employ as well. And
yeah, the one thing I was surprised not to see was compact fluorescent bulbs. I don't think I saw one.
Huh, interesting. I know LEDs are the next, I guess they're going to be the next thing. I saw some lamps recently that were lit up somehow by algae. And the military actually just made a big investment in biodiesel, and not this sort of biofuel that takes food. It's not made out of corn or beans or whatever. It's made out of algae. And both the military and I think one of the airlines, I think Continental, made a big purchase of this stuff recently, and it burns a lot cleaner. It's renewable. It's an interesting development for sure. But the renewables and the efficiency stuff, making planes lighter, making our cars lighter. Amory Lovins of the Rocky Mountain Institute, another brilliant person, talks about how not only did American people get more obese, but our cars got obese.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the car I was in that I went toddling around the Autobahn on was this adorable little Ford Focus with, get this, a diesel engine in it. And it's, you know, Ford is making and installing modern, clean-burning, relatively speaking, severely reduced emission diesel engines, and they joyfully put it in their compact cars for sale in Europe. But they will not, for the life of them, bring them here. Now, that engine is going to have a 500,000-mile lifetime, generally. You know, diesel engines in automobiles have something between 300,000 and 500,000 miles before rebuild, has been my experience. But will Ford put that in one of their Fiestas or one of their Focuses here on a lot in the United States? Oh, hell no! Americans don't like them, no diesel. And diesel was cheaper there than gasoline was. It's more expensive here.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, executives in some industries see efficiency as cutting into their sales of their gas or whatever stuff they're selling, so they'll resist it every step of the way. They want their planned obsolescence. They want, you have to get a new engine, get a new car or whatever.
Right, and we were there in the middle lane of the Autobahn, and we were getting, and it wasn't just Porsches and Lamborghinis that were blowing our doors off in the far left lane. It was diesel-powered Volkswagens, and gone.
You know, and even if people do need a bigger car or a truck for, you know, there are some practical reasons to have a bigger car, you can make the cars out of, again, Rocky Mountain Institute, what they're talking about is carbon fibers, apparently, and they've been pushing it and getting all this resistance, but he said next year, I think it's Volkswagen or BMW is going to start rolling out the first carbon fiber, very light material for cars. Again, if it's not an obese, overweight car, you can get tremendous gas mileage. And
yeah, and let's remember that little diesel Ford was probably pulling down something on the order of 50 miles a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
50.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with a gas engine in it, it probably still does about 35, but that's an engine that's going to pay for itself pretty damn quick.
You know, so these developments I see, it's, you know, I'm sure these executives keep an eye out for them too, because they're interesting movements. In New York City, I just came across this video project called Street Films. And, they're talking about urban areas doing all sorts of, urban design projects to make things a little more friendly for bicyclists and for pedestrians and even for car drivers. If people are going to be driving cars, there are more sensible ways to do it. And, so there's developments for sure. And, again, it was great to see you out there in the world, stirring things up yourself. And, what else did I want to take up?
Well, I do want to make sure and ask before we go, because I know you have an activist spirit. I have no doubt that you will join us, Preston, in the effort to get more co-sponsors and original co-sponsors on the AIC Act. And I'll just, you know, ask you to call your Congress critter whether he's or she is a Republican or not, ask him to sign on to the AIC Act.
Do you have something on your Facebook page about that?
You can go to stoptheaik.org.
Okay. I will do that.
And you can also go to crmw.net, and there will be stuff about AIC there as well. AIC stands for Appalachian Community Health Emergency. Isn't that catchy?
And I guess, you know, if not for you, for your listeners who might want to check something out, back to the progressive media stuff, there's a lot of good material out there on YouTube. I know David in Maine is aware of a lot of it and disseminating a lot, and I'm sure all of us are finding cool stuff. But I wanted to let you know, we were talking about free markets earlier, and a friend of mine, well, I've got a collection of a lot of Noam Chomsky lectures, and some of them are from like 20 years ago, but in a way more relevant now.
Funny how relevant they remain, I was about to say.
Yeah. And about, I think, five months ago, I gave this friend this VHS that I had, which, you know, tells you how old it must have been at least. And he has the technical capacity to upload stuff. And he uploaded this Noam Chomsky free markets lecture. And it's had over 50,000 hits.
Wow.
There. Yeah, so, again, you know, Chomsky said, you know, he's not long for this world, and all of us, you know, we just have moments in this space, but you know, we can do things that make these moments more rewarding.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely.
Give the world a thanks. You know, say a word for economic justice.
Yeah.
And the right wing does not want us looking up Noam Chomsky material on YouTube. If even better, I think, or at least as good, is a Noam Chomsky interviewed by Bill Moyers from about 20 years ago, and someone recently uploaded a copy of that, so you might want to check that out as well. It's a really powerful dialogue between two different sort of founding fathers, finding their soul fathers, I think, Bill Moyers and Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn and Bob Kincaid, and it's great to be an ally and friend of yours. And
thank you, Preston. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and greetings to all the Bob listeners out there, the Horn listeners. And so.
All right. Okay. Well, have a wonderful weekend, Preston, and we will talk soon.
Right on.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye now. And let's get one more call in before the evening ends. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's your Marine Corps buddy, Mark.
Hey, Mark. How you doing? Thanks for the help last night.
Pardon? You're welcome. I'm proud of your continued effort, and I've been trying to, any case, and I listened to your whole show about your trip to Europe. You asked a question earlier in the show tonight about what does Mitt Romney want. I think I'm going to give you a quick answer.
Okay.
Close the show out. Mitt Romney wants Eli Lilly Westinghouse hospitals. He wants Chevron Pennzoil public highways. He wants Coca-Cola and Gatorade water. He wants Sears and Wells Fargo police departments. He wants Blackwater, Blackstone Group, and Carlyle Group, and for the U.S. Army. He wants Corrections Corporation of America to run, slash Halliburton, to run our jails. And the National Guard will now be called the U.S. Walmart National Guard. Ignite KBR schools. Public schools will now be ran by the corporations known as KBR. Our fire departments will be known as Brinks Fire Departments. Barrick Mining, Valero Federal Parks, Chamber of Commerce, City Parks, Monsanto, Archer Daniels, Midland School Lunch Programs, and ConAgra Public Sewer Departments. And if you walk down the street in America and you get pulled over by a policeman that now works for a corporation like the Sears, you won't have public police, you'll have Sears policemen, and you appeal your case, you'll have to appeal it to a General Electric judge, and if you take that judge to a higher calling, that'll be the Raytheon Supreme Court.
Jesus, I'm afraid you may be right, Mark.
Yeah.
I mean, the put that counterpoint to this note I got from Robert in Australia, Phase 5 in the chat room. He says, fire and rescue in New South Wales. Your house catches fire in New South Wales, Australia, and the local fire brigade come and put it out. It's a government department and has been for at least a century. The New South Wales Rural Fire Service is a volunteer-based firefighting agency, and it's also a government department with 70,448 volunteer firefighters. And then he puts in quotes, not paid your monthly subscription fee, close quote. Unbelievable. And I think that's the value. There's a lot of value in that, because to turn around and look back at the United States, that's what you do. Your mouth hangs open and you go, unbelievable.
They're going to run a credit check before they respond to your house if your house is on fire. If you're late on your gas bill, which will be an Enron or an Exelon gas bill, they're not going to show up. They're going to say you'll be a code 8. And it's all going to be a corporatized. And that's why I make the argument. They put the cameras. I was living in Atlanta, Bob, in the 80s for a little bit before I went back overseas, and then, in the 90s, for the Olympics. And they put all the cameras there, before the Olympics. But I noticed after the Olympics, they kept putting cameras up, and they're all over the place. They're all over the country. Cameras are everywhere. And, that's because when you get off the toll road at the next exit, and they're getting rid of the humans, so you're going to have to pay to get on what used to be a public road everywhere. It's not just a stupid highway. It's the corporatization. This is fascism, and then you'll start, and when this takes place, and I pray to God all this doesn't, but it looks like it is, then these corporations will start gobbling each other up, and then if you look at George Orwell, then it'll be one corporation or just one with multiple heads like it may already be.
I think you've got a fairly clearly distilled vision of a rather dystopian future. Mark, it's awfully good to hear from you, my friend. I hope we will talk longer sooner.
We will, Bob, and I always listen to you even if I don't call the show.
All right. Thanks so much. It's good to know. Bye now. Have a great weekend. And all of you have a great weekend. Wow, where did the week go? Gosh, it's good to be good. It's good to be back in the chair. David in South Carolina noting, then when the house burns down, they condemn the property and take it from you. Whew. Frightening. It is time to get out of here, though. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you for a wonderful week. Thank you for all of your support. And hopefully it will continue to roll in so we can get everything caught up from last month and the month before and maybe stop sweating a little bit. Sure would be nice. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Thank you very kindly for all of your support. Thank you for your ideas, your conversations, the very most precious thing you have. Thank you for the time that you spend with the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, our chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. To my ad writer, David in Tennessee, thank you. Thank you to Reverbo, our op-ed correspondent who is on assignment behind the cornbread curtain and below the possum line. Thank you to John Fox. And thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thank you, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and StopTheAche.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.